And welcome back. It is another week of the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar live coming at you from TSN 990 in Montreal. Hey, Jay.
Welcome back to you, my friend.
Thank you, sir. Great to be here.
We missed you.
You did a hell of a job.
Well, thank you very much. We had a lot of fun last week.
It was really fun to get home at the very end of a long, long night. And hey, think about it. Springsteen opened for you guys in my mind last week. I came home and listened to the show. So,
would you expect any less? Of course, Springsteen is going to open for us.
It's
big time.
Not frequent that the opening act is longer than the main act. But yeah, wonderful week in New York. Had a grand old time.
Yes,
and I need another vacation. It was go the whole time. It was I need a vacation for my vacation now.
I think I'm next, buddy. I'm next in line.
Yeah, when do you do?
August.
We're going to do a Fenway Park thing in August, right?
Are we? Okay, let's do it.
We discussed that
Did
late
we?
One night. Yeah.
Depends what night you get me on, Kaufman.
You know, man, we should go to Fenway.
Dude, we should so do that.
So, yeah, let's make that happen when you get a little bit of time off.
Yeah, I've always wanted to do that. So before that place falls apart, let's go down there.
It's not going
looks
anywhere.
Like it's in, yeah, it looks like it's in good shape. So I'm there.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. So I had a bunch of crazy run-ins in New York this week. And we'll get to all of them throughout the show. We're going to be joined by one of them in about an hour's time. But on Wednesday morning, NBC erected a giant Stanley Cup in the heart of Times Square. And I heard about it I saw it on Deadspin. They were talking about it. And I thought, hey, what the heck, I'll show up for it. And there was a little booth, it was sort of cordoned off. And I show up and look, there's the Stanley Cup, and there's Adam Graves and Commissioner Bettman. So I figure, how am I going to get on the other side of this fence? And credentials. I'm on vacation. What do I have on me? I have my Twitter feed. So I show the woman from the press agency my Twitter feed, and I'm thinking to myself,
that's so ghetto.
Well, it's the only major sport that's going to let you do that.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, if Commissioner Goodell was on the other side of that barrier, a Twitter feed wouldn't have done anything for me. But, in I went and got to speak to Gary Bettman for a couple of minutes and tried to cover as many bases as I could. And we're ready to go, Jimmy. Might as well. Without any further ado, let's start off the show with a bang with my 2.5-minute conversation with NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman.
One of the things we talk about a lot on our show is this You Can Play campaign.
Yes.
And I'd love to know your thoughts on it.
I think it's the right thing to do. I'm fully supportive of it, and I'm very proud of Patrick and Brian Burke for everything that they've done in that regard.
How long do you think it'll take before a player comes out and feels comfortable coming out of the National Hockey League?
I'm not in the prognostication business. I have no idea. But I do think in terms of everything this campaign represents, in terms of tolerance and no bullying, as long as it's constructive in making it a better environment for anybody who wants to participate in sport, we're making progress.
Do you think that the league has done enough this year to fight concussions and headshots?
Well, we're doing a lot. It's something that is a priority for us. It gets a lot of our attention, our energy, our focus, and our money. And I believe we've been leaders of all the professional sports in dealing with concussions going back to 1997. We were the first sports league to do baseline testing, to have protocols, to change rules. I mean, this is something that we're working on continuously. But we're also dealing with an aspect of medical science that still has a lot of work to be done in that community.
It's obviously very scary, though, in the situation where the most valuable asset of the league missed almost a year and a half of playing.
Well, but that may be a function of more aggressive diagnosis and more conservative treatment, which is something that we've really been trying to change the culture with, and I think we've been successful.
Do you think there'll be hockey next year?
Sure, why not?
There's been discussions about labor strike.
Well, I certainly hope not. I mean, we haven't even begun negotiations, and the agreement doesn't expire until September 15th, but I'm hoping that when we sit down and finally get to negotiate, that it'll be quick, painless, and quiet.
What do you think of the Winnipeg experiment? How has it gone as far as you're concerned?
I don't view it as an experiment. I view it as an opportunity to bring a team back to a place that was passionate about its team, about the game. And now the circumstances, which are vastly different than they were 15 years ago, have all the markings of a great success story.
Quebec City, do you think that's going to happen?
As I said, I'm not in the prediction business, and as you know, if you follow us, we try not to move franchises.
And that was 2 minutes with Gary Bettman. Stay tuned next week for Bud Selig and the following week for Roger Goodell. Is Kennesaw Mountain Landis available?
Probably.
I don't
know.
He's
probably still commissioner.
I think we could probably know where to find him as to whether he'll speak or not.
Well, the current commissioner has the same ideas as Kennesaw Mountain Landis. So.
So there you have it. Yeah. And I tried to cover as many bases as I could. And
yeah.
I mean, we know who we're dealing with. It's a lawyer, and I got very canned lawyery responses from the commissioner.
Safe answers, as usual.
Would you believe that nobody has asked Gary Bettman about You Can Play? Those are the first on-the-record comments.
Did he tell you that?
He didn't, but no. You Can Play did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Really?
Kind of surprising, huh?
He's like, yeah, I guess I'm fully supportive of it.
No, I thought that it almost seemed like when he answered that question, almost it was like, well, where's this question been for the last 2 minutes, 2 months? I've
really?
Been waiting for this question. Absolutely.
Okay, so he seemed anxious to answer it a little bit and was...
You know, I figured I'd start off with a softball and then go into concussions.
Yeah.
And I thought the concussion stuff, boy, do I wish I'd done that interview after yesterday's hockey game.
Yeah, no kidding, eh? You should have Ron McLean'd his ass a little bit, but, you know, you were happy to have that 2 minutes.
What does that mean?
What?
Ron McLean'd his ass.
Well, you know how he always is. You know, during the All-Star break when they have their little interview and then they fight on air and they're almost slapping each other at the end of it.
Okay, when I think of Ron McLean, I don't think of him as the guy to challenge the
He does, though.
The
That's
opinion.
The only time he does is he seems to screw with Bettman a little bit more. He lets Don Cherry say whatever he wants, but it seems when he's got Bettman on the air, he's almost, you know, he's kind of like bitching him around a little bit.
It was nice to hear this.
I think it's the right thing to do. I'm fully supportive of it, and I'm very proud of Patrick and Brian Burke for everything that they've done in that regard.
It's just the right thing to say. And so often you get people in positions of power who get awkward and squirmish with questions that don't necessarily make them comfortable. Gary Bettman handled that one like a pro. And
he did. Well, what were his mannerisms like? He was really,
totally fine.
Yeah.
So everybody keeps asking me how tall he was. And truth be told, I interviewed him on a ramp and he was above me. So I have no idea.
That's all by design.
That's right.
That's a power play, my friend.
Every time. That's right.
He's a lawyer. Remember, he knows.
He knows. I thought that the most interesting thing that he said was when I asked him about Crosby and on following up to the concussions and the headshots and where he says that the league has done everything that they could. You know, we'll play both right now. This is Bettman on whether the league's done enough to combat concussions and headshots.
Well, we're doing a lot. It's something that is a priority for us. It gets a lot of our attention, our energy, our focus, and our money. And I believe we've been leaders of all the professional sports in dealing with concussions going back to 1997. We were the first sports league to do baseline testing, to have protocols, to change rules. I mean, this is something that we're working on continuously. But we're also dealing with an aspect of medical science that still has a lot of work to be done in that community.
I hate the end of that. I hate this, still dealing with medical science, and we still need to wait on medical science. I think it's pretty obvious.
Guy's dizzy. He's got headaches. He can't play. He's got a concussion.
Speaking of number 87, who I ask him about.
Well, but that may be a function of more aggressive diagnosis and more conservative treatment, which is something that we've really been trying to change the culture with, and I think we've been successful.
Really? Do we think that they've been successful?
No, but of course, like you said, this is pre-first round.
But that sounds to me like pawning off Sidney Crosby's concussion issues on the doctors in Pittsburgh. And that's a heck of a thing for the commissioner of the league to do. It's almost like passing the buck.
Well, who has the responsibility in the end? I mean, that's the question. Who should have the responsibility of taking care of the players?
Well, the doctors are hired by the teams, but you would think that the players' brains are in the trust of the league.
Yeah, but he was pawning off a little bit. But right now, as we see it, I mean, it is the team's private doctors, their own personal doctors that are taking care of their own guys. And I guess it's kind of a wait and see philosophy. How bad is this going to get? And I don't know how, if it could get any worse right now.
Well, let's talk for a couple of minutes. I imagine we're both referring to the Gong Show yesterday afternoon, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
What the hell was that?
You didn't like that? That was the best damn thing I've seen in months.
Really? That's the kind of hockey you want your kids
That's
playing?
I don't have any kids. I don't care. That's the kind of hockey I want to watch.
Really?
It's passionate. It means something. These guys care. And you see it. It's entertainment. It's pure entertainment. And there was some, hey, don't get it. It wasn't just a Rangers Flyers game from the 1970s. There was some good hockey involved. There were some great looking goals. You saw Simmons' goal, and
yeah,
there was some great looking plays.
Absolutely, but Jay, it was a travesty what went on out there. Players at intentionally trying to injure other players. Sidney Crosby and Claude Giroux getting into a fight. Two guys who were out with concussions this year fighting.
You didn't think that was great?
No.
That reminded me of Le Cavalier and Iginla.
No, that's the
last. It
was
beautiful. The two stars on the team going at it, putting it all out on the line. Passion, my friend.
Fighting does not equal passion. There are a lot of ways for a player to express his passion on the ice. Fighting is not the be-all, end-all of hockey, and if it is, then hockey's in serious trouble. Serious trouble, Jay.
Well,
This thing that the Canadians couldn't do all season is the be-all, end-all of the National Hockey League? Until they signed Brad Staubitz? I mean, give me a break.
No, I never said that, but when you see Claude Giroux and you see Sidney Crosby fighting,
yeah,
you know it means something. It's not necessarily they're going out there like two goons and just fighting for the sake of fighting. They're fighting because they're sticking up for their teammates. They're showing leadership. They're showing that they care, that they have passion, and that they want to move on to the next round. They want to hold that cup. What is wrong with that?
John Kakalakis is here as well. Good evening, John.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Would you like to pipe in?
Yes, absolutely. Sidney Crosby, he's the leader of that team. He will not go down without a fight. And he's passing that along to his teammates.
I knew the Greek would take my side.
We're taking the word fight too literally.
He's frustrated. It's definitely, I mean, who wouldn't be? And he's taking it out on Giroux. There's nothing wrong with that.
Sidney Crosby lacked all of the professionalism yesterday that we've come to expect from him. And it was shocking to see that the Philadelphia Flyers were not the catalyst in all this. And that, you know, preconceived notions about the Broad Street Bullies and all that, they outplayed Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh tried to react by playing dirty. And I'll tell you, Jay, as much of a great game as it was, I felt like a rubbernecker looking at a car crash. There was something about that game yesterday made me feel like hockey really needs to change. And it's easy to stand up on the soapbox and say how much I love the violent aspect of hockey and that it, you know, the machismo of it all kind of excites the man in all of us. But that was really a shameful display, in my opinion. And I don't think that Gary Bettman would have been standing in Times Square, you know, speaking of soapboxes in Times Square, saying how great it was. I don't think that that's the hockey. I understand that that's the hockey that might be able to be marketed to the United States. But it's a culture of violence that, you know, hockey is a beautiful game. And that was not seen in the disaster that was Pittsburgh-Philly yesterday.
I completely disagree.
Good. That makes for good radio.
Yeah, it does. It's not a question. It's not a question of whether it's a good marketing tool. It's a question about honesty. It's a question about us being what we are, human beings. When we go out there on the ice, I mean, hockey is a close game. You have a very, very small playing field. Guys are really close together. Guys are really big.
Sure.
And they're going for this small net, mm-hmm. and they're trying to put a puck in it.
Yep.
What do you think is going to happen? It's honesty. It's passion. It's the real deal. I believe what I'm seeing. This is not WWE, you know, where it's just glorified fake violence.
No,
when Claude Giroux and Crosby drop the mitts, I believe every second of that.
But I never disbelieve any of it, Jay. It's... You know, you're on the ice, you're wearing that jersey, you're playing for the damn Stanley Cup. Is there anything bigger than that? I don't think the fighting makes it that much bigger. I don't see how incorporating that into the sport makes the sport better. And I don't see how arguably the two best players in the league fighting at center ice is going to improve the game. And frankly, it was a terrible fight.
Well, of course it's a terrible fight. It's Claude Giroux and Sidney Crosby. But you're speaking of fighting as if it's a separate entity. as if it's something that's either incorporated or not.
In the playoffs, Jay, I always thought that fighting was a separate entity. The way that you don't see fighting in the Olympics, I found that you rarely saw fighting in the playoffs. My memory of fighting in the playoffs goes back to Ron Hextall hitting Chris Chelios over the head, and all hell broke loose.
Yeah.
But I thought those days were gone, and I was pretty sure those days were fewer and far between. And the opening round of the playoffs so far, as exciting as it's been very exciting. I do not like that element.
But the bottom line is, yeah, the ratings on NBC have increased by 50% this year. And at the end of the day, I think that's what Gary Bettman is looking at. And I can go back to baseball in the 90s when we came back from a strike and the steroid was becoming a big issue. And you had the Sammy Sosa, Mark McGwire home run derby. Although I'm sure behind closed doors they knew they had a problem, at the end of the day, the fans were coming back.
Okay, but if you listen to Bettman, John, then Gary Bettman is not turning a blind eye to concussions, that the league is supposedly more advanced than any other league on that. So I see what you're saying. I don't necessarily think that it's the same. Again, you know, what's it going to take? We always kind of say it's going to take something traumatic, like someone's going to have to die on the ice for it to change. I'd rather it happen before that.
I take a complete libertarian stance on this. These guys go out there.
Yeah, but you do that with everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
These guys go out there. They know the risks. It's a hockey game, okay? I mean, you speak of professionalism. I mean, these guys are not suits. They're going to go out there. Crosby got on there with pure and straight-up honesty. He said, I don't like him, and I don't like anybody on their team. What is wrong with that? That is fantastic. You know, a little shove of the glove away. It reminds me of when Shane Corson used to be talking to the referee and giving a guy a face wash at the same time. It's amazing. That's great stuff. That's pure entertainment. Those guys go out there and they say, listen, my career can end. But they choose to do what they do, and they do it well.
Some of them, yes. The ones in the playoffs are doing pretty well.
Well, I mean, I can understand veterans. Like, you have the veterans from the NFL who come in, and they played at a time where concussions weren't an issue. They really didn't even know about it.
There no guaranteed contracts in the NFL either, right?
That's right. But nowadays, guys know exactly what they're getting into. They're paid good money to do it. It's like boxing or UFC. There's always a danger. You go in there, you do what you got to do, and you've chosen your path. You've chosen what you want to do.
For me, Jay, it's just not the part of the sport that I appreciate. I think that hockey is so much better without it, in fact. I like the hitting. I don't mind, you know, I am all about that. But the fighting, to me, is just excessive. And I see the argument is always, well, it's the policing issue, right?
Right.
And without this, then how would they police each other? And you'd end up seeing more slashes, and you'd end up seeing more dirty hits. I don't know what the answer is. I just know that it seems ridiculous to me. When Sidney Crosby's getting in a fight, it just doesn't seem right.
Oh, man, I think it seems
so. And again,
so
don't get me wrong, Jay. I was not impressed by Sidney Crosby yesterday. I felt like Sidney Crosby sunk to a level almost like Tiger Woods in that way that...
Kicking his club.
Kicking his club, yeah. So right. And suddenly Sidney Crosby's acting like that, like Tiger Woods. He's being that guy?
No, I don't know. I mean, he didn't exactly take much. I mean, I would have expected from Crosby to take more of a little bit of a hissy fit after it was happening. But you know what? He was getting down and dirty. He was talking trash in interviews afterwards. He was doing what a captain should do. I don't like him. I don't like anybody on their team. And we're going to come back and we're going to get him. The problem is that the Flyers kind of coaxed them into their own game and then did the opposite. Played like the Penguins.
That's it.
It was genius.
That Flyers team looks good. And, you know, to wrap up this segment and bring it full circle, it seems a little weird, but I'm kind of cheering for the Flyers.
Yeah, I don't know why.
I know exactly why. With all of the great work that Patrick Burke has done, I feel like this is just wonderful karma if he can get a Stanley Cup ring this year after all the stuff he's done for You Can Play.
I think it's the right thing to do. I'm fully supportive of it, and I'm very proud of Patrick and Brian Burke for everything that they've done in that regard.
You're listening to The Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar. We've got a big show tonight. We're going to be joined by Leonard Yell and Rodney Ramsey in about 10 minutes' time. Two local, very funny stand-up comedians who have a big show on Friday. We've got Ben Christensen from the MLB Fan Cave. We've got some good stories to tell you about my time in New York with Ben. He'll be on at midnight.
You going to tell all the stories?
No, not a chance. Some of them will stay at the West Side Tavern on 23rd and 9th. Some will stay at the Fan Cave. Some will stay at the Mineta Tavern across from Cafe Wa. And some will be at on Thompson near your brother's old place, Jay. We've got Travis Reitzma in the late hours of the show. He's going to teach us about baseball. That's right. We got a lot to learn. You want a team back?
So does Brett Laurie. You got to know. Apparently.
We will discuss that. And this is for our friend Craig Brownstein over at Puck Buddies. Yeah, we know our Grateful Dead. This is the Kaufman Show. Took my $20 bill and it vanished in the air. Sit out front but take my time. A friend of the devil is a friend of mine. I get home before daylight. Just might get some sleep tonight. Got two reasons why I cry away each lonely night. The first one's named Sweet Anne Marie, and she's my heart's delight. Second one is prison babe, and the sheriff's on my trail. And if he catches up with me, I'll spend my life in jail. Got a wife in Chino, babe, and the one in Cherokee.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar. Gary Bettman is done.
We're through with him. We kicked him out of studio. Right. Enough of his trash.
If you want an autograph, he's hanging out on Green right now.
Looking for a cab.
Oh, I'm sure he'll find one. He's just got to walk over to Westmount Square.
No, those are limousines.
Come on, man. We're like 2 seconds from St. Henry. This isn't opulent Westmount here.
It's not?
Well, I guess.
There's a jewelry store next door, Kaufman.
I think it closed.
Okay.
Yeah. So. But the other store.
Times is tough.
The other store, it does say, we buy gold on it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So it is like St. Henry. The pawn shop's opening up.
That's right. It's a Westmount upscale pawn shop.
Excellent.
You can buy gold and sell Picassos. It's, it's how we do.
Or the subway is just around the corner, too.
The you mean like the food one or the Metro?
The Metro.
Okay. Or are you, what was it? What are we in Toronto right now? We're calling it the subway? C'est le Metro, mon ami.
Le Metro.
Le Metro.
Okay.
Come on.
Le Metro.
There you go. All of us with our terrible R's. Ugh. On prend le Bixi.
Le Bixi.
They have Bixi in Toronto now, actually.
Do they? And is it actually Bixi? Or
It's called Bixi, and it's year-round. Because, you know, their climate's so different from ours.
Really?
Oh, there's a lot less snow in Toronto.
A city that called in the army for a snowstorm is having bikes all year round?
Yeah, but that was like 12 years ago. That was when Uncle...
when global warming didn't exist.
Exactly. When Uncle Mel was running the city. Mel Lastman. Remember him?
Yes, I do.
Big boy. Nobody!
Yeah.
What a disaster.
He started to lose it a little bit at the end there.
I think he actually did.
I apologize.
Onward.
Yeah.
But... There's no shortage of ways that we can make fun of the mayors of Toronto. Our mayor, kind of, I don't know. I don't really have an opinion one way or the other on Mayor Tremblay. I don't think the city's any better or worse for him. If I was a member of the voting public, which, hey, look at that, I'm over 18, I am. I think this man would probably get my vote.
Without a Mayor Quimby, our town would really stink. We wouldn't have a tire yard.
We wouldn't have our gallows or a shiny Bigfoot trap.
It's not the mayor's fault that the stadium collapsed.
Quimby, if you were running for mayor, he'd vote for you. Paid for by the mayor, Quimby for mayor, mayoral committee.
And there you have it. I think Mayor Quimby would definitely get my vote.
I like the little stadium collapse line.
Well, that's
sounds familiar, doesn't it?
It's not his fault that the stadium collapsed. I see Mayor Tremblay actually using that line in an ad campaign. I think that'd be fantastic.
Using the actual same jingle, just replacing his name with Tremblay.
Could you imagine?
I'd vote for him. If he did that, I'd vote for him. I'd actually vote
paid for by the Mayor Quimby for Mayor Quimby for Mayor Quimby. He's just fantastic. But, yeah, enough about city politics, I think, for tonight.
Okay.
And there is something I do want to get into a little later. We'll start it off now very quickly. Do you hear about this Keith Moon thing?
No, I'm not aware.
Well, Jimmy, you're a big Who fan, so
he,
I know.
He died.
Jimmy, he died in 1978?
Yes. 78, at the age of 32.
There you go.
Oh, Jimmy.
I'm a huge Who fan.
No kidding.
Well, Jimmy, needless to say, you will not be seeing him at the London Olympics this summer.
I would have loved to see him, though.
Well,
I think we all would have loved to see him.
They reached out to him, which...
with what, a Ouija board?
Literally.
Oh.
Can you believe it?
Really?
They reached out to Keith
Moon's... I was kidding.
The London Olympic Committee reached out to Keith Moon's handlers to see if he'd be available to play during the rock and roll finale to the London Olympics.
No.
Yeah.
That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
It might be the best thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
I don't think I've
ever
laughed.
Did they do it in plain ignorance? Or did they...
Oh, yeah. And they feel awful stupid.
Really?
Yeah.
Send invitations out to Jim Morrison and Janis Joplin, too?
Well,
Jimi Hendrix joining us?
Those are three Americans, but I think your point is well taken.
No.
Yeah. Can you imagine how fired that idiot is?
Brian Jones gets an invitation.
Exactly. Yeah. Brian Jones is going to come and play a sitar. And I don't know, man. I've heard dumb things in my life. First of all, how this ever got leaked. I imagine it was through Keith Moon's people that it got leaked.
But he still has people?
Why not? They make a lot of money.
I guess he has some sort of foundation or what have you.
His estate, of course. Everybody has an estate.
The Moon Estate.
The Moon Estate.
Yeah. Now, what was interesting was a huge music festival this weekend, Coachella, out in the desert outside of L.A. And one of the highlights was this man.
Only God can judge me.
That right?
Only God, man.
Nobody else.
Nobody else.
All you other motherfuckers,
get out of my business.
Ready?
Perhaps I was blind to the facts. In the back, I couldn't trust my own.
Tupac. Correct, gentlemen. This is Tupac Shakur, who played Coachella yesterday. No, I'm not kidding.
Are we having a zombie apocalypse or
something?
We are
having an absolute zombie apocalypse. We are in the future, man.
Okay.
Tupac, the hologram, played Coachella yesterday.
It was unbelievable.
Really?
Yeah. I saw it on
there. Well, I'll tell you what. If you can go on to YouTube in the other room and find the audio and then beep out all the swear words, we'll play some of it. But there's no way that's a clean set. He did it with...
That might take me all night.
You want to beep out the audio of a Tupac song?
This is why I found the clean version. You can turn this back up, Jimmy. Yeah, this is why I found the clean version of Only God Can Judge Me, which is one of my favorite Tupac songs. But yeah, John, if you can pull us up like 30 seconds from it. I know he was with Snoop. I'm talking about him like
Drake.
Live.
Snoop and Drake.
Oh yeah, and Warren G, I heard.
Possibly.
You know, you got to regulate, right?
I'll get on top of it.
Speaking of regulate, after the break, we've got some guests, and it should be fun. Should be a lot of fun, actually. Jeremy Dobsky is here. Leonard Yell is here. Rodney Ramsey is here. And they're going to be talking to us about the 420 show. Tickets only $5. That's right, the 420 show. Why? Because it's on Friday, April the 20th. So clever. It would have sucked as the 419 show. This is the Kaufman Show, and we'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
Summer Bring It On. Hot Knife to the Hash, The Girls in the Grass. It was like a summertime day today, wasn't it, Jay?
I like that song.
Yeah, that's Yellow Days by Gord Downie and the Country of Miracles.
Yeah.
Love this song. Been waiting all winter to play this damn song.
Days of whiskey and cake, nights of make-believe, days you don't believe, nights of faith and flame, not consumed by flame.
All right, so welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar. We're going to talk a little 420 now. We're going to do this as gingerly and carefully as possible, but this should be a lot of fun. In studio right now, we have the host of the 420 show, Jeremy Dobsky. Hello, Jeremy.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. You're going to have to talk so much louder than that and so much closer
All
to
right.
the mic.
All right. I'll get closer to the mic.
There you go. Just,
Struggling
you know.
Rodney over here.
Yeah, exactly. Rodney Ramsey, good evening.
What's up?
How are you?
Not bad.
And Leonard Yell, Len from Skunk. How are you, sir?
Very good, Dave. Thanks for having us.
My goodness. It was, I've met you here once before, but it's so nice to put a face to the name after hearing Mitch read your letters all those years on Melnick in the Afternoon.
Well, it's no big surprise. I'm a big fan of Mitch's and the team.
And a funny guy, and TSN.
Oh, and TSN.
Yeah, I don't know who this team business is, but...
there you go. TSN 990.
So tell us about this 420. This is some sort of concept that really is very unfamiliar to me, but you know, maybe you can educate our audience.
Okay, well, from what I understand, 420 started off in California, where school kicked out at 4 o'clock, and the kids who wanted to be cool decided, and I don't want any kids smoking dope, but decided that at 4:20 they were going to be high. So the 4:20 reference came in that let's get together at 4:20.
Okay, see, I always thought it was a police scanner code, like 187 is the murder of a cop, right? We all know that from Sublime.
I know that from Snoop, but yeah, I guess that's a cultural thing.
Well, okay, I'm pretty sure that on that one there's a word before a cop, too, right?
You know Sublime.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Rodney Ramsey just put
roaming
me in
the streets of coffee.
So, and it has nothing to do with either Hitler's birthday or my friend John Gibson's birthday either. Which I mean, although it has been celebrated for John Gibson's birthday.
Well, we'll try not to celebrate Hitler's birthday.
Yeah, that wouldn't be too fun.
Wait, Hitler's birthday is 420?
Yeah.
Amazing.
There's a whole segment in itself, boys. Get to work, get your pens ready.
Thanks for my first 5 minutes, buddy. Yeah. This is
great. So the show is at 8:30 on Friday night at Le Parc des Princes, the Park of Princes. Where is this place? 5293 Park Avenue.
Yeah, it's on Park Avenue, just above Fairmount towards St. Viator.
Oh, perfect. Munchies right on toe, eh?
All kinds. Just
grab as many bagels as you can.
Yeah, you'll actually be torn between the two bagel shops. Personally, I prefer Fairmount.
Do you?
Well, yeah, they have... the onion one, you know, and it's not a very social food, but it tastes great.
That's such a non... Are you a Montrealer, Len? I always assumed you're a...
Oh, yeah. Actually, I grew up in the Mile End.
I feel like that's not a very Montreal response.
Well, no.
You know, like in New York, you can get every kind of bagel there is under the sun or at the grocery store. But when you go to Fairmont or St. Viator, I feel like you have two choices.
Yeah, well, you do.
And then if you're feeling like, you know, you want to spend a little extra coin, you pick up some smoked salmon or something.
Well, you have two choices at St. Viator.
Which, by the way, Rodney, we call lox.
Oh! Yeah. Thank you.
No worries.
He's not referencing the hip-hop group either. It's not the lox. By the way.
Because the hip-hop, we just call it bricks. Yeah. Is that no, I never heard of that. Or...
I don't know.
I like that, Jay.
Thank you very much.
You know, the P. Diddy references come few and far between on the Kaufman
Show.
Well,
they're better than the Hitler references. So, yeah.
Maybe they're equally as funny. I don't know. So, 5293 Park Avenue, right in the Bagel District, as they like to call it.
There you go.
And we've got... You guys got a hole for $5. This is pretty...
it's a crazy lineup.
Yeah, not bad.
We started talking, Jeremy and myself, and Jeremy actually put together the lineup. And
what is the lineup? I don't even know.
Oh, I can do this for you. The host is Jeremy Dobsky.
Bam.
Who's here with us. Featuring Walter J. Ling.
Yeah.
Emery Fine.
Who that?
Morgan O'Shea.
Uh-huh.
Straight from Ottawa, Sophie Buttle.
Shazam.
Jason Euro.
Who that?
Vlad Levitt.
What?
Our man, Len Yell.
Yeah, that's him.
Once again from Ottawa. Boy, they're a busy highway. Skip Phillips.
Huh?
We've also got, he's not
oh,
on the
and
poster.
Mo Aurora.
On the poster, we've also got, I mean, not on the poster. We've also got Chris Dulgar.
I was going to say, if it's not on the poster, like, I'll get to it.
Oh, but yeah. You won't get to it because it's not on the
Sorry, who did you mention?
No, Chris Dulgar is also going to be on the show. And then we've got the two musical acts, Oral Turpitude and Teacup. Oral Turpitude's a guy, plays an acoustic bass, sings the dirtiest songs you'll ever hear. They're great. I just worked with him on one of his songs on the weekend. And then Teacup, she raps about cheese and condoms and other such wonderful things. So, you know, it's going to be a crazy mix of people.
Who's closing out the show?
We've got Rodney Ramsey.
Rodney Ramsey.
And if you've heard of this guy.
I saw Rodney at the Comedy Works a couple of weeks ago, and he absolutely killed it. It was a wonderful bill, and even without the two-drink minimum, you were funny. It was,
oh, thanks. I appreciate that.
It was really good. Well, no, because he was early in the night. So
Dave
it was before
not holding back
hit.
On the compliment.
What can I say? I missed it last week, Jay. It's good to be back.
Yeah, Rodney was the first name that we thought of when we put the show together. Yeah. So you
Who's going to close it? And just like, Rodney.
Yeah.
Well, there were no overt pothead jokes in your act.
I think I'm going to write some special for this.
Well, we gave you some source material.
Oh, yeah, the Hitler 420 thing, man. Yeah, so going in the act. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Wow. Well, here we are on the Kaufman Show, and we're talking a little 420. How did we not plan this months ago? I mean,
I don't know.
The show before 420, of course, we've got to discuss
it. I'm still a little held back by the cheese and condom reference.
Yeah, I just tried to go past it and...
You know, those go hand in hand, but it depends on what part of town you're in. Never mind.
I'll let you continue.
She doesn't rap about them together. I think that would be a little stranger, but I mean, it's weird enough. She raps about them separately. But yeah, maybe she should try to combine them in a song.
Many have tried, my friend. Many have tried.
Now, I'm sorry. I'm going to admit again that I listened to the podcast last week. Why are we constantly trying to come up with people to rap things? And what's going on here?
I don't know.
I think
we
should stick to our own business.
And, we, yeah.
You know, we'll let the funny people be funny.
The rapping to my brother.
Well, that too.
Yeah.
That too. And to Teacup.
Yeah, exactly.
Teacup.
Oh, yeah, she raps about tea appropriately.
She'd better.
Yeah, she does.
If she doesn't, I'd be severely disappointed. So which one of you funny gentlemen is going to give us a little taste of what to expect on?
Well, you mentioned something, Dave, about Rodney and his sports.
Yeah, well, Rodney's a very funny man. So honestly, I could very much sit back right now and pretend it's 420 and just enjoy Rodney do a bit. But
stop hitting on me, man.
All right.
Just behave.
So awkward.
There's room for the Holy Ghost here. Come on. Was that worse than me with scouting, Jay?
I think you're at about the same level
right
now.
Cool.
It's freaking me out, actually.
No,
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
We'll calm it down.
Okay.
Right. So yeah, Rodney, if you want to give us a little tease of.
I hope this is not going too far. I actually told this on a morning show in Winnipeg, and I had to write an apology for it. So it's Winnipeg. It's Winnipeg. Come on. This is 420 related. So it was my birthday a couple weeks ago, and my brother, for my birthday, he bought me a black and white bong. You know, and I just thought it was appropriate to call it my Barack Obama. Yeah, there you go. Bam.
That's right. It's the 420 comedy show.
You had to apologize for that?
Winnipeg, man. It's Winnipeg. They apologize for living there every day.
Yeah, because there's no bongs in Winnipeg.
God forbid. That's where they come from.
Yeah.
That's where they're manufactured. If you had called it a half white, half black bong, then if you would have had to apologize.
Yeah,
because
that's probably why.
You led with the black.
I made an interracial bong. That's why they were upset. Yeah. Like, we don't do that here.
Yeah. They would have had no problem with the Hitler 420 part, though. That's fine.
Oh, they were like, more Hitler jokes, please.
I'm not saying that everybody in Winnipeg are Nazis. I'm just saying that all Nazis are from Winnipeg. I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying.
It's at these moments in the show where your host just likes to sit there quietly.
Yes, and shake his head
I just like to see what's coming out next.
Sit there and keep his job.
On tonight, the final episode of The Kaufman Show. Coming up next... Reverend Jimmy Swaggart.
Yeah. Wow.
Is he still around?
Yes.
Really?
And so are his tears.
Oh,
his tears are
his
still
tears
around.
Tears are
well.
Real. Yes. Yes, we'll have to book him for next Easter. I don't know.
Imagine if we can get Jimmy Swaggart on the show.
We can get whoever we want.
That would
we just
be
gotta
awesome.
Work at it.
Yeah, that's a lot of work.
That's
we have to find out if he's still alive first.
I'd have to,
and then
I'd have to do all kinds of homework. And,
yeah.
And I think there'd be this like follow up of Kaufman. Really, Kaufman wants to interview me on a sports show in Canada. No, I don't think that would work out too well. We'll go with Reverend Jim Baker and Tammy Faye instead. I think. We're going to turn this into like 1 a.m., let's say, Jay. It'll be the evangelical hour on the Kaufman.
Yeah, tune in, people. Can't miss this.
We'll start with Travis Reitzman and the Church of Baseball today.
Sure.
So, gentlemen, we have a couple of minutes left with you. It's the 420 show. It's only $5. Listen to this for a tagline. Do you like to laugh? Do you like to laugh on weed? Well, then this is the show for you. Skunk Magazine proudly presents a high-grade batch of comedians and comedic acts for your entertainment purposes. This sounds like a fun, wholesome, medicinal evening.
It's going to be cathartic.
Will it?
Yeah, it'll be, you know, an experience for stoner and non-stoner alike.
Good.
So, yeah.
What time can we tell the cops to show up?
You know, like 3 a.m.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect.
At the end of the party.
So we out of there. Be out of there by like 2:30.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, perfect.
And no one get hurt.
That's right. Jeremy Dobsky, Leonard Yell, and Rodney Ramsey. Thank you all so much, and we'll see you at Parc des Princes, 5293 Park Avenue, on Friday night at 8:30 for the 420 show. Tickets only $5.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Jay.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, we'll catch
thanks
you soon.
Thanks for the coffee, boys.
Yeah, thank you for the coffee, Len.
Appreciate
really
that.
Appreciate it.
Well, not a trip to the station without some coffee.
That's the last time I met you. You brought
philosophy.
A coffee too, so yeah. you're a good man, sir.
Well,
and,
I appreciate it.
And I like your T-shirt. It's very much in theme for Friday.
Yeah, my good friend Howard Dover and
get into that mic. Get into that mic. That's
my
that's,
good friend Howard Dover, Montrealer, and it's greentherapy.com.
Greentherapy.com. Fascinating. I wonder what that means. This is the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar. We'll be back in a few. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. A little light jazz for you.
Heaney Majeski, Johnny G, Eddie Juiced, Johnny Pesky, Thornton Lee, Danny Gardella, Van Lingo Mungo, Whitey Karowski, Max Lanier, Eddie Winkus, and Johnny Vandermeer. Bob Estalella, Van Lingo Mungo.
Jay Farrar is loving this, by the way.
Augie Bergamo, Sigmund Jacuki, Big Johnny Mize, and Barney McCoskey. Hal Trosky, Augie Gullin, and Pinky May. Phil Cabaretta, George McQuinn.
You like that, Jay?
Yeah, that's great.
Pretty awesome, man.
Yeah, that's very funny.
That is a song called Van Lingle Mungo.
Okay.
Which old-time ball player whose name was brought up on Twitter tonight by our next guest. You can find him on Twitter at Shaka Brody. You can also find him most days and nights on the corner of 4th and Broadway.
Uh-oh.
You just bang on the window. Look for the guy with the beard. Ben Christensen has the coolest job of anyone I know right now. And I can now call him a friend. And he's a friend to this city. He is a Montreal Expos fan living in the MLB fan cave in New York City. Good evening, Ben.
Hey, Dave. How's it going?
I'm great. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. I especially like that friend part because it's definitely 100% true.
You're having fun tonight?
I'm having a blast tonight, except for the fact that the A's are getting smoked by the Angels 3-0 right now.
Yeah, the A's are Ben's team since his youth, his favorite team. But he does have a very soft spot for the Expos, as you can see by the picture that he tweeted earlier tonight. Looking very good hanging out with me on the streets of New York and both of us in our Expo stuff.
Two of the best-looking guys in New York that night, I got to say.
Yeah.
Wow.
The bevy of women following us in tow proved it, didn't it?
Definitely.
So before we get into baseball stuff, you hung out with John Bones Jones this morning, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
You say it so matter-of-factly, like, oh, yeah, that was just your Monday, you know?
No, it was really interesting because we didn't know until about 2 days ago that he was going to be stopping by. And over like the last 2 years, I'd say, I kind of started getting into MMA fighting because I've always been a big boxing fan. And with John Bones Jones, because I lived in Oregon, and I didn't live actually too far away from where Chael Sonnen grew up in West Lynn.
Oh, there's a real character, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Because he went to the University of Oregon. He was on the wrestling team there. And he was actually the wrestling coach for one of my coworkers at Max's Tavern in Eugene. His name is Brett Cook. And so I actually started a small conversation when we were shooting our scene together, because there was supposed to be like a moment of intensity between the two of us.
Oh, no.
And before he went into the bathroom, because he was supposed to be coming out, I was like, just imagine I'm Chael Sonnen. And the look on his face just went from like smiling to just absolute ferocity.
How stoked is he about the Rashad fight coming up?
He was pumped. One of the things he said is just it's the biggest fight of his career.
Oh, and most definitely.
We all kind of agree upon that.
Are you the only UFC fan in the cave?
No, actually, Kyle Thompson, the Cardinals fan, is actually a huge UFC fan.
Okay.
And he was actually the one that kind of pitched the idea as far as the video that we put together today, which I believe is probably going to post in the next couple days, I'd say, on the MLBFanCave.com website.
Fantastic, and I'm sure you'll tweet it out, and we'll get it all out there to the masses, especially out here in Montreal.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got to say, Ben has a passion for baseball that you don't see very often anymore, especially in somebody our age, and it's why don't you explain that, Jason Worth?
Rampage Jackson just show up? What was that?
Ricardo just blasted that one from the couch, so I had to do it.
I fully understand. Every time that Ben hears the name Jason Worth, he has to bark like a dog.
Okay.
And that doesn't matter where he is, if he's at the fan cave, if he's on an interview with TSN Radio in Montreal.
In church.
If Jason Worth comes up, he has to do it.
That's great.
So I can imagine that this has become the bane of your existence, and all you're waiting for is Jason Worth to go on the DL.
No, that'd be so bad.
Would it?
I mean, he's one of my favorite players, but, I mean, aside from, you know, my fantasy squad, he's just a great hitter. I mean, he hasn't really proved that much with the Nationals, but I'm hoping he rebounds this season.
Well, he's got a good contract, so he doesn't have to try so hard anymore, right?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Does anybody else in the fan cave have a name that makes them do something ridiculous?
Yeah, so we've got Ashley, who you met at
the Giants fan, right?
The Giants fan.
Yes, please send her my best. Or my second best. We send you our best.
We actually came up with her the other day because she's a Giants fan, but she's also a huge Will Clark fan, where anytime the name Will Clark is mentioned, she has to yell, "Cannonball!" Just like in Anchorman. And then Sean Kiffin, who you also met, anytime we say or yell skips on the dance floor, he has to do kind of a variation of the robot dance from the Dave Chappelle show.
Yes, I happened to catch that at the Minetta Tavern last Sunday night. It was very impressive. You guys sound like you're in summer camp.
We are. It's such a blast. I mean, it's ridiculous that we're getting paid to watch baseball, write blogs, and meet all the celebrities that come through. It's unreal.
Is the celebrities the big pull, or is it being sort of a voice for baseball?
To me, it's more of a voice for baseball, because I've always wanted to do something on a larger scale to get people back in the game. And if this is my conduit, then I'm definitely going to take, you know, the biggest opportunity I can and full advantage of it just to try and get people, you know, talking baseball on a regular basis again.
And other than through Twitter, and I guess you do that, you achieve that through the blogs and through the
oh, yeah.
You can see your videos. It's at MLB.com or MLBFanCave.com?
MLBFanCave.com.
Okay. I got to say, I spent a little bit of time at the Fan Cave last week, and I got to spend a very good amount of time with Ben. And, man, I hope you win this thing. I want to be able to talk to you all summer long from the Fan Cave.
I'd love to talk to you all summer.
It's have you ever watched so much baseball in your life?
I think last season was like the first real year I dedicated to watching as much baseball as I could, in which case I caught about 150 Tigers games, just because anytime they didn't play the A's, for some reason, Eugene, the A's are blacked out. Despite being about 474.4 miles away, I mean, not to be specific.
No, of course not. We're in Blue Jays territory. Same thing happens to us.
Yeah. And so I can't watch any A's games, so I kind of developed a bit of a TV following for the Tigers about 2 years ago. And so the few games that I wasn't able to watch were, of course, the games the Tigers played, either the Mariners or the A's, to which case I would just go to the bar I work at and watch the A's and Mariners play each other, or Tigers Mariners, vice versa, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, but you've never had it where you're, like when I walked in there, I think there were 8 games going on at the same time.
Yeah. The most I was ever able to pull was about 4 in one sitting, just because the MLB.TV package that I had for the last 2 years, on the computer, you can only watch 4 games at one time.
Do you feel like your brain is frying a little bit from all this baseball?
Not yet. I'm definitely a little bit more insomniac. It's a great word to use, but it's kind of the wrong verbiage to use. But the lack of sleep has definitely, affected me heavily over the last 3 weeks or so that we've been here.
Well, you're in New York. You kind of have to live it up when you're not in the Fan Cave,
Exactly. There's so much to do here.
At least that's what you told me.
Yeah, I mean, when we're in here 15, 16 hours a day, and, I try to dedicate at least 2 or 3 hours of sleep, a night, then I've got the other 4 hours or so just to go rummage around the city.
So before you were talking about being from Eugene, which is just outside of Portland, right?
Yeah, it is. About 110 miles south.
Eugene was in the news last week. Funnily enough, a couple of days after you and I had a conversation, it was as if somebody was spying on us. But you informed me of a scoop that I was unaware of. And now the world knows that Eugene, Oregon is Springfield.
It is.
Springfield from The Simpsons.
Yes, it is.
And the bar that you work at is Moe's Tavern.
Yes, it is. That was actually the most surprising part, because we'd heard legend about that for a long time, and we always kind of advertised as it was. But the story we were given was Max's Tavern, the bar I work at, and then there's another bar in an area of town called the Whitaker, called Tiny's Tavern, which was also supposed to be based on it. But the interview that Matt Groening gave to the Smithsonian, he flat out said Max's Tavern is Moe's Tavern.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, can you tell me some of the other examples that prove that Springfield, Oregon, which is just outside of Eugene, is actually the Springfield, USA for The Simpsons?
So it's, as far as character names, there's a bit of a hybrid going on between Portland and Eugene, but as far as physical locations, a lot of it actually is in Eugene. So as far as the names, just to get the Portland out of the way, there are streets Flanders, Quimby. There's a specific part of Portland called the Terwilliger Curves.
That's amazing.
I mean, that's for Sideshow Bob. And then going into Eugene, you've got outside the journalism school, Allen Hall at the University of Oregon, which is where I spend most of my time. There's a pioneer statue, which is actually the basis of the Jebediah Springfield statue.
Unreal.
And we've got a power plant not too far away. The Gorge is actually something that's based out of George Washington. George is, I kid you not, the name of the town.
That is so cool.
So
it's really the only place in America that is sort of driving distance to the mountains, the ocean, and all those things that, the Gorge, the things that Springfield, the cartoon Springfield has.
Yeah, exactly, because Mount Bachelor, which is around Bend, is only about, 79 miles away, and then the ocean from Eugene is about 45 miles.
It's amazing. It's amazing. But still, the one that flips me out the most, and I hope you'll indulge me for a second, Ben, is this one, and after we play this clip, I expect to hear why.
Oh, yeah.
When the weight of the world has got you down and you want to end your whole life, bills to pay, a dead-end job, and problems with the wife, a
But don't throw in the towel, cause there's a place right down the block where you can drink your misery away. Just a flaming mow away. Happiness is just a flaming mow away.
And that little pause in the Action on the Coffin show was brought to you by Moe's Tavern in Springfield, USA. Moe's Tavern. That's right. Now, Ben works. You don't work there anymore, right?
Not currently.
Did you hand in your resignation?
I did, but my boss, Ward Fairbairn, was just like, hey, you know, if you ever come back, you know you have a job here, right? I'm like, oh, yeah, of course.
Well, that's very kind of them to say, but I imagine that next year this time you'll be writing for Sports Illustrated or something cool like that. But
that would be ideal.
Yeah, wouldn't it, though? You could stay in New York that way. But in the meantime, can you explain to me is it similar on the inside to Moe's, or is it a gruffy bartender? Because I can't picture you acting like Moe Szyslak, you know?
Actually, I do on occasion. I was probably the most surly of the bunch of bartenders we had there. I'm definitely the gruffest in appearance, but as far as the actual aesthetic of the bar, if I can find all the photos I've taken, I'll actually archive through the Maxwell Tavern Facebook page and stuff like that and send them to you. The way the windows were set up in the front of Moe's Tavern are pretty much identical. The way the benches are set up. The bar, there's just a big mirror with a couple shots or a couple of bottles of liquor, and then just the tavern, the tap handles are set up the exact same way. And until we got rid of the pool table, June of last year, because some amazing, and I emphasize the word amazing, fraternity kids decided to break out in a fight and body slam another kid.
Oh, Jay, don't you just love when the frat boys act up in the bar, right?
I loved it when that happened. Oh, man, and just cracked it right down the middle. We had to get rid of it. So that completely took away the last bit of, you know, how Moe's actually looks in appearance compared to our bar.
Oh, well, I still feel like I want to get down there at some point and take the human tour. I absolutely will. I promise you. In the meantime, Ben, we do have a tweet coming in, and I imagine it's coming in from a couple of feet away from you. It's from Ricky Mast in the MLB Fan Cave, and he says, Jason Wirth. And we also have Ricardo Marquez. Oh, I blog better. Ricardo, who's also probably 2 feet away from you, saying, so yep. Jack and Brody's doing a radio interview with the Kaufman Show, and we're yelling Jason Wirth. Anytime that name is mentioned, Ben has to bark.
There you go.
Ben, Montreal is a hell of a baseball town. I know rumors don't always prove that true, but you get up here and we'll give you a great little baseball tour. I've told a lot of people about you, and everybody up here is very excited with what you're doing, and we will continue to support you.
I can't wait to get up there, and I'd love to, you know, shake the hands and talk to everybody who's supporting me up in Montreal.
Oh, good stuff, Ben. We will catch you soon. In the meantime, we will follow you on Twitter at Shaka Brody, Shaka Brodie. It's a fun follow, ladies and gents.
Appreciate it.
Ben, we'll catch you soon, and keep your radio on, because we got a little song for you to finish off the segment. Don't know if you know it or not, but I think you'll like it.
All right. I look forward to it.
Send my best to everybody in the cave.
I will. Take care, Dan.
All right. All the best. Bye-bye. There he goes, Benjamin Christensen. Live on Broadway and 4th, watching the A's losing to Ricardo Marquez's Anaheim Angels. Ricardo's at iBlogBetter. Ricky is at Ricky Mast, M-A-S-T.
Mr. Pujols have a home run yet?
Mr. Pujols, unless if he has one tonight, it would be his first.
Yeah.
Mr. Pujols is, I don't know. We live in a weird world, Jay.
Think anybody's getting a little nervous in Anaheim right now?
We live in a world where David Ortiz is doing well and Albert Pujols is not. And it's April, and it's 20 degrees here. For you Americans listening, it's 80 degrees here? I don't know. It was almost 80 today.
Lower than that.
Okay, it's 80-ish.
I don't know. Imperial system.
That's right. That's right. Imperial. We'll have to call up Imperial Brian.
He can answer for us.
Yes, thanks to Metric Julie and Imperial Brian for really bringing the old balls. This is Loretta Lynn and Jack White for our buddy Ben. The song is called Portland, Oregon, and this is The Kaufman Show. We'll be back. Welcome back to the program. I think we call it The Kaufman Show. I'm Dave. That's Jay. I just pointed like there were cameras, but they're not. It's because we're coming in on the Jimmy Riggers. So
no cameras this week, my friend.
No, it was March 19th that the cameras were in. It was a lovely Monday. It was just following the St. Patrick's Day shenanigans. And we continued them. And we were lucky enough to have Ian Hermel and Hermie 11 on Twitter. And his cohort, Ari Grunswig from Imagination Creations. And they came in and they filmed an episode. And you can now see it online on YouTube. Type in The Kaufman Show if you feel like it. Type in The Kaufman Show TSN and then you'll find us and not Andy Kaufman.
Yeah. I noticed that when I was searching. I said, wow, there's a lot of Andy Kaufman on here.
Yeah, well, a lot.
And then I started watching Jerry Lawler slap him on David Letterman, and then
show. That is the type of violence that I just abhor.
It's a separate entity, Dave.
If you want to rewind an hour, you can hear Jay and I debate about the merits of fighting in hockey, and maybe we'll get to it again, but...
Oh, you want round two, buddy?
Yes, round two, exactly.
Sidney Crosby, your Claude Giroux
ass. Please, you're Patrick Brazeau, and I'm Justin Trudeau. Let's see how good you are, and let's see how much of a man of your word you are.
Oh,
yeah. I'm Lane Price, and you're Pete Campbell.
Oh wow.
Jay did not watch Mad Men once again. Have you caught up at all?
Yes, I have. I'm caught up to this week.
Oh, amazing. Okay. Yeah. So, but you didn't
see... I didn't see yesterday's episode, but you just call me Pete Campbell? Really?
Would you rather be Lane Price? Lane's the British one.
Yeah, I know. I would.
Really?
I would. At least he's got a little game.
Oh, they had a little fist fight in the office yesterday.
Oh, don't tell me that.
Sorry. It was... I'll give you another spoiler. It was summer of 1966, as we know.
Okay.
So Lane goes off to the pub and watches Britain, England win the World Cup.
Right.
And they say, this is the end of football. And I'm thinking to myself, if you're a British soccer fan, summer of 66 was the end of football.
Yeah, it was.
But it was cool to see that excitement. And I mean, everything they do on that show is so realistic, right?
Most of it, yeah.
Oh, you have a complaint about something?
Well, it's I mean, it is a TV show.
I like that Don Draper.
They
got to
keep you interested.
I like that Don Draper has power windows in his car, and I still have roll down. And it's 2012.
Really?
Yeah.
That's because Don Draper was ahead of his time, yet so behind it.
Did you see him at
the whole catharsis?
Did you see him at the Blues game the other night?
No.
Yeah, he was at the Blues game, and he was.
Well, he's a big hockey fan, isn't he?
He's a big St. Louis everything fan.
Right.
He's. I think he's their most famous celebrity.
St. Louis?
I think so.
Right now, maybe?
For sure. Okay. I can't think of anybody else.
I don't want to be Pete Campbell. I want to be Don Draper.
We all want to be Don. We can't all be Don.
Yeah. Except he's got too many kids. That's the problem.
He's got two kids.
Yeah, it's too many.
He's got the same amount of kids as his. he's got two kids and two names, Jay. I mean, it's not a bad, it's a pretty equal thing.
All right, whatever. Too much responsibility for me.
I think we all want to be Don Draper.
We all want to be Don Draper.
And, you know, you just mentioned Letterman. I went to Letterman last week.
Yes, how was that?
It was so cool to be in the Ed Sullivan Theater, man.
Yeah. Is it an intimate setting? It's probably appears much smaller, it's a lot smaller than how you see it on TV. Usually that's what happens.
I didn't see the balcony. I was on the main level.
Yeah.
But I'd say there were probably 400 or 500 people there.
Okay.
I mean, and it could be way less. I'm never good at this. I'm the guy that used to think that there were 20,000 at Expos games.
Right. And so where's the interview with Letterman, man?
Yeah, not going to happen. No.
Gary Bettman's easier to get.
I'll tell you, I had to renounce Mets tickets to go to Letterman.
Oh, poor thing.
I prioritized. I decided that I was not going to go to a baseball game. And one of the biggest factors in that was that the Nationals were playing. And Steven Strasburg was pitching, which is kind of exciting. And
but how often do you get to go see a David Letterman show?
Never.
I mean, that's what
never.
You...
Never. I've always wanted to see Letterman.
You made the right choice, my friend.
And I'll tell you, the night before, I went to the theater.
Yes,
I went to the theater.
Oh, how posh.
It was
how
quite posh.
How bourgeois.
It was very bourgeois. Oh,
yes. How pretentious.
Great Poupon and went to the theater.
Yes, yes.
I caught a play called Magic Bird, which was not about a magical bird. But about Magic Johnson and Larry Bird. And I had read about it, that they were doing this. And they have a two-for-one ticket booth, like a 50% off ticket booth in Times Square. So I lined up and got a sixth-row ticket for $60. Turns out it was the last night of previews for this play. The premiere was the next night. It was a fantastic play. I haven't enjoyed basketball in 20 years.
Right, and you've told me many times that growing up, you were a basketball fan.
Huge.
Back in the heyday.
Magic Johnson, old school.
The late 80s and early 90s was a great time for basketball, and even I was watching at that time.
I used to have a Dominique Wilkins poster up.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, I was a basketball fan as a kid.
Nice.
And probably other than hockey, the sport I played the most, there was a basketball net in my driveway growing up.
Yeah.
So, you know, I read Larry Bird's autobiography when I was a kid, and the only time I've ever discussed basketball on this program is when we've talked about it being the 20th anniversary of Magic announcing that he has HIV, mm-hmm. and that I heard that listening to Mitch Melnick give a sports update on AD back in the day. It was really cool to see a play that dealt with all of the issues, and I was very familiar with all of them. If you've seen the HBO documentary on Magic and Bird, which is phenomenal.
I have.
The play is pretty much that. They managed to take their careers from the time they were drafted in 79, they show the Final Four game, all the way through to after the press conference, after Magic retires, and then comes back to play for Team USA at the Olympics.
Right.
It was just a phenomenal play.
What an interesting dynamic between those two guys. Oh. And that ESPN documentary really explores that.
I can't
having
think of
dinner at his mother's house.
The scene where they have the meal with Mrs. Bird, and she greets Magic and says, "You know, you're my favorite player. I've been following you since high school." And Bird goes, "Thanks, Mom."
Yeah.
Just a wonderful, wonderful play. I could not recommend it higher. And the next day, go to Letterman. Who are the two guests? Magic Johnson and Larry Bird.
That's great.
It was so cool, Jay.
Great.
To be able to see the play and then see those two guys in the flesh. And I'm telling you, just seeing Magic Johnson, the same way that hearing him or watching him, and you know what a baseball fan I am, the whole level of him just having bought the Dodgers. But Magic Johnson's alive, and he looks great.
And he has a majestic presence.
Couldn't have thought of a better word to describe
it. Yeah, he's the kind of guy that lights up a room when he walks in. He's just, there's such an aura of respect about him.
They're both heroes of mine.
Yeah.
And that's not a word that I bandy around willy-nilly. It's something that's important. And their work ethic and their desire to win and their desire to always do more and push and be better is really one of the most wonderful aspects of sport. And I was trying to think of rivalries that equal that, and I'm having a lot of trouble. I think of Mario and Gretzky, and I know.
Not the same thing.
It's not. It's not. And yet the legendary story. You ever, you're a late night kind of guy like me.
Am I?
I think so. You ever find yourself at the corner of Lambert Kloss and de Maisonneuve at the end of a long night at Moe's, the Cascroot there?
The little breakfast place.
Yeah, the little 24-hour breakfast place.
I was there not too long ago, yes. Okay. I had a good night that night.
Yeah, and, I bet you did. That was
I was a little bit hungry, yeah.
That was a classic place for me. And we've actually run out of certificates for Brewtopia, but
the brew,
yes. But we will get those next week back to you, and we'll start giving them away again. But there's a beautiful painting by Sharon Ramsey when you walk inside Brewtopia. If you walk in, you walk up the stairs. It's on the main level. Go into the room on the right, and it takes up the whole wall.
Right.
And the painting is staring north on Lower Crescent at dusk, or at dawn. Sorry, at dawn. And for me, that's the view of many a late night when I used to bartend down there at Club Zone over at 1186 Crescent Street. And we'd take the whole gang and everybody would walk over to Moe's. Now, for me, Moe's always was the place, Jay, where Mario and Wayne Gretzky went and had a meal together after the All-Star game in 93. And the thought of walking in there and seeing Mario and Gretzky sitting at a little banquette sharing a poutine or whatever they were doing.
Wow.
Yeah. And I kind of, when I saw the play and heard the story again about Magic and Larry having lunch with Bird's mom in French Lick, I kind of pictured that with, like, Mario saying to Gretzky after the game, like, hey, I got somewhere cool to take you.
Yeah.
And Mario wasn't even playing in that game. That was when Mario was in remission from the Hodgkin's lymphoma, I believe.
Yeah.
I think that was when he was, like, remember when he was, like, leading the league in scoring by so much, and then LaFontaine overtook him, and then he came back and won the... Oh, Mario.
Well, that was Mario.
Oh, Mario.
But, I mean, they never really faced off in the playoffs much. I mean, you could... Bird and Magic would be more of a Frazier-Ali or Navratilova and Everett. Maybe.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Which ESPN did a documentary about both those as well. Ali Frazier. It wasn't really Ali Frazier. It was more about Ali's last fight.
Okay.
One of the 30 for 30 documentaries.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Actually, Catching Hell was on tonight, which is the Bartman one.
Yeah.
I got a tweet tonight from somebody wondering why I wasn't watching it. And I was like, well, it's one, I've seen it, and two, it's the playoffs. I kind of feel compelled.
Yeah. Three, I got a show to do. Yeah. Man, come on.
Well, not that wouldn't help me carry on for a segment or two, that show.
Yeah.
It's, Bartman and Buckner and all those wonderful bees.
Those poor bees.
The poor Moises Alou. More people know Moises Alou for that than for his incredible baseball career.
I know. And Moises,
didn't he tell you that, actually?
You know what? We didn't really talk about it. We didn't talk about the Bartman thing. I wanted to know more about his Expos days. And let me tell you something. Moises Alou has one of the most... He has the driest sense of humor you'll ever find. I mean, it's almost... You know how dry my sense of humor is.
Oh,
you know?
Yes.
I don't give anything away. He was fooling me into thinking that... He was really serious on some of the things that he was saying.
Oh,
he was so dry. He doesn't even, he doesn't even smirk after one of his little witticisms. And it was kind of intimidating. Imagine me, you know, I mean, we're sitting down and we're having a, you know, and Pedro is there, not to name drop.
Right. No, of course not.
You know, and some of the things, which I can't repeat, that Moises Alou said were so funny. And even my brother fell for it. I brought him a drink, and he said, I'm not happy with this, Jay.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, oh, wow. Sorry, Moises. He goes, you know what? We're getting out of here. And he gets up from the table, and my brother's like, oh, you're, and he puts out his hand to shake his hand. He's like, oh, you're leaving, Moises? Okay. He's like, everybody relax. I'm just kidding, man. Everybody relax. And Pedro knew he was joking. Now Pedro's known him a lot longer than I have.
Right.
And I was like, wow. So there's one thing about Moises Alou. I mean, he never gave away that much on the ball field.
No.
And you could see in certain interviews at times when he felt like being funny. The guy is very, very funny, and he's such a great personality, and it's too bad. It really is too bad that he's so well-known for this Bartman incident. It's not like it's Tony Tarasco. You know what I mean?
Well,
do you know what that reference is?
Of course I do. Jeffrey Meyer.
Right.
Come on. What do you think I am? 96. I remember that like it was yesterday, Jay. Come on.
Sorry to insult your baseball knowledge.
Hey, man, every 16-year-old kid watching that game was Jeffrey Meyer.
Moises Alou had a great career.
He did.
And he did it with style, and he was such a pleasure to watch.
I'll tell you, Jay, though, if we ask the average casual baseball fan to name two things from Moises Alou's career, you'll get Bartman, and you'll get that he pees on his hands.
Interesting.
You don't remember that one?
Yes, I do remember that one. Two things I would think of.
I'd go with the World Series with the Marlins.
Yep.
And, that terrible injury. Yeah, you like that, Jimmy?
Yeah.
That was in St. Louis.
Yeah.
Early in his career, not long after we acquired him.
I thought
it
was in Philadelphia.
Oh, I thought it was St. Louis. Jimmy's saying St. Louis.
Thank you, Jimmy.
And I believe that was not. Yeah, I got one for you. Jay, you know who we traded to get Moises Alou?
Moises Alou came in.
He was a pitcher.
He came in from
Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
God, who did we trade? No, I don't know.
We traded Zane Smith.
Zane Smith.
Yes.
Boy, what a loss.
The late 80s Expos wonders.
Yeah.
Hey, we only have to wait 10 years for the 80, I guess we'll wait 8 years. Right. And we'll have the 1989 Expos reunion.
Yeah.
We can get Mark Langston up in this place. Yeah.
I also remember Moises Alou's grand slam. I believe it was in the 11th inning of a crucial game late in the season. I was there and it was just really hype.
I don't remember that.
No, I guess it's more of a personal memory, more than anything else. But of course, yeah, he did win the World Series with the Marlins, but I didn't care.
I thought that was really, I was really happy for him.
Yeah.
This was before Montrealers were predisposed to have it against the Marlins. This was back when Wayne Huizenga of Blockbuster Video fame owned the Marlins. And then he acquired this wonderful, crazy team and then fire sale, second the season was over.
Yeah, we didn't feel too bad. Go ahead, Jimmy. You got something?
You were right. September 24th, 1992. The Montreal stops the Pirates 5-1 in 14 innings. Moises Alou, grand slam.
Nice, Jay.
See that?
Yeah. You. 20 years ago doesn't seem so far away, huh?
That's not good. Yeah. Wow.
No,
yeah.
I think that's...
We were at that game, and it was...
You and your brother?
Yeah, it was hype. It was so... I never forget it.
That would have been, you said September what?
September 24th, 1992.
One of, was Gary Carter in the game?
I'll find out for you.
All right, yeah. I would imagine that would be one of Gary Carter's final games.
There is a clip of that actual home run in my brother's video, Remember, a tribute to the Montreal Knights.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Oh, cool. Okay, yep. I'll have to check that.
Yep.
That's,
It's one of our fondest memories. We always talk about it because it just came out of the blue. And he was so excited. He had the fist bump. I mean, you know, nowadays baseball is a little bit different from what it was back then. You're not supposed to show. I mean, Marquise Grissom gets an inside the park home run to win a game. And he got a high five from Larry Walker. And that's about it. He went to the bench and went back to the locker room. It's a little bit different.
But what season was that? That was 94, wasn't it?
That was 94.
So that was a team that had bigger thoughts in mind than just today's win. And I think that makes the difference. I think that on a team that wins 67 ball games a year, you'll have a different reaction to the inside the park.
Still, at that time, ball players were a lot more subdued. It was part of the culture where you don't give too much away. You're a baseball player. You know, you have to be serene and you have to act as if, yeah, we'll do this every single day, man. We don't mind, you know?
Yeah, but I like that. That's the Bear Bryant, you know, when you get into the end zone, act like you've been there before.
Exactly.
And
the Barry Sanders.
And you know what? You know who you saw that the best with to bring this back? Magic and Larry.
Yep.
Those guys, it was, I mean, sure, you'd see a celebration, but it was only to win.
Give nothing away.
To win the game. That's
Give
right.
Give nothing away.
That's right.
That's right. You don't start backflipping in everybody's face. because you're going to be back in that end zone again, like Barry Sanders said.
Love to hear from you guys tonight. 514-790-0990, 1-866-896-2546. Throw out some of your rivalries that are the most interesting.
One-on-one athletic, yeah. For athletes, I guess.
Jimmy, we just played this song, man.
You don't want to hear it again?
Yeah. You know what? We're gonna start this over. Why don't you give me the last 2 minutes of track one on that disc? You know, like we'd planned. This is Portland, Oregon again for Ben Christensen.
Now he's gonna be really happy.
Yeah, I know. Well, hey, Ben, I know we love Shaq and Brody.
Oh, he played it again. Aw.
A little interlude, you know how we do. This is Thundercrack. First time I ever heard this song in concert was last Monday, because a cute girl up at the front of the stage had a sign that said "Play Thundercrack for the birthday girl."
Nice.
So Springsteen walks up to the sign, grabs it from her, turns it around, shows it to the band, and suddenly Thundercrack is in the set list. And that is why he is the best around. Listening to The Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar. We'll be right back.
Thundercrack, baby, I'm back. It's time she tell me how she really feels. Bring me down to a lightning shot. You can't watch my partner relax. She moves up, she moves back. Out on the floor, there's no one clean. She doesn't say she comes to jump back, Jack. She's got the heart of a ballerina. Step on the bus, hung up her life. Steps she's like the girl, she bumps, she bumps, she grinds. Even now, there's all hacks from the west side of the track. Moving close, the kids are sure time. She moves up.
Coming in on the Twitter, we've got the polemicist ringing in. My favorite athlete rivalry at the moment is Jose Canseco and Dignity. We'll be back. Welcome back. It's the Kaufman Show. And it's funny how a simple tweet sparks the flame that sets the world ablaze.
You better not be sitting.
That's right, we're talking Jose Canseco right now for the next, 3 hours?
Maybe 30 seconds. Could somebody on Twitter tell me what the hell this guy is going on about?
Can you pull up his feed? Because right now I see...
I've got his feed.
I see Throwing Smoke wrote, Twitter Canseco is too much for me. I like him better in The Simpsons. Travis Reitzma, who will be on the show in about 10 minutes' time. Are you seeing what Canseco is tweeting right now? Sad but funny. Please hook me up. What's going on here?
I really don't know what any kind of reference is, but his last couple of tweets are blood in, blood out.
Wasn't that a movie?
I guess so. I don't know. And before that, it was I found an alien in my soup.
Wasn't that a movie? With the Stel Getty or something? I don't know.
I am creating an army to fight haters. Who is with me? Hug for you. Hug for you. Sending a lot of hugs, too.
Okay.
While he's sending out threats as well, I guess.
Really?
He's really splitting up his fan base here.
You don't
bring me your tired, hungry, and lonely, and I will give you a hug.
Well, that's like part Emma Lazarus, the poem on the Statue of Liberty, right? Give me your tired, your poor, huddled masses yearning to breathe free.
Right.
Jose Canseco is now the Statue of Liberty.
Braid your hairy back. Race your turtle and tell me who won. If you're mentally ill and paranoid, we can be best friends. Is he fully dressed in a bathtub somewhere, crying?
With the toaster oven?
What is happening?
I don't know.
Is this like Close Encounters of the Third Kind? Did some alien ship flash him and now he's going nuts? What, is he building a big mountain in the middle of his living room? What is happening?
Jay's on fire, ladies and gentlemen.
What
Mr.
is
Jay
happening
Farrar.
Right now to Jose? Can somebody explain? I don't know.
I don't know why this isn't lighting up the phone lines. I think maybe people are tired of Canseco. I find it to be one of the great... it's almost Shakespearean, the highs and lows that this guy has faced in his life.
Yeah.
It really is. If William Shakespeare was around now, he'd be writing a play about Jose Canseco, and he'd make it rhyme, and in 500 years, people would think it was so smart.
Right. Yeah. And you know what? The way he's tweeting right now, it's going to end up in a Shakespeare ending. Believe me. It's not looking good right now.
As Milhouse says, let's hope that this ends... Let's hope this ends well, unlike... let's hope this ends like Romeo and Juliet, not in tragedy.
I don't know. He's not even making any sense anymore.
You know what? I'll tell you, Jay, it's very funny. I actually sat down and listened to the interview that I did with him in, I guess it was 15, 16 months ago.
Right.
On the station. I honestly thought about replaying it tonight.
Okay.
And we'll save it for another time.
Okay.
But the way that Jose Canseco is just going... God, I would love to talk to him again. He's coming to Ottawa in about a month's time, and I want to try and get down there and get a press credential and see if I can get a few more minutes with him.
Just show your Twitter feed. And don't forget to braid your hairy back and race your turtles. I don't know what's going on.
Race your own damn turtles.
I don't know. Who's tweeting for him? Frank Zappa? What the hell is going on?
Is that what you think when you read it? Really?
I don't know. It's so...
I love it. Travis
Obscure.
Reitzma's piping in, and it's like, dude, you can't wait 9 minutes?
Yeah,
like,
seriously. It's all about you, Reitzma.
Canseco does this all the time. It's bad. He's the real-life Kenny Powers, but less funny. Yeah.
It's not funny at all. It's disturbing to me.
You know what? I even find Kenny Powers a little bit sad, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Like, just that there's something about very tragic about a fallen hero. And maybe it's The Simpsons, maybe it's that I was a kid, but... Wow, did I love Jose Canseco growing up. I'd imagine that someone like Shaka Brody growing up and cheering for the A's has that same soft spot in his heart for Jose Canseco.
The Bash Brothers.
There was nobody bigger. And I know this sounds ridiculous, especially considering if I preface it by saying, now go look at his Twitter feed. But I have a lot of respect for Jose Canseco for speaking his mind and getting those books out. And I know it blackballed him, and it's not the way you're supposed to conduct yourself. But I feel like history will judge him better than his peers do. And on a similar note, Roger Clemens' trial started today.
How's it going?
Who knows? Maybe it'll end in another mistrial. I know that yes, Travis, Canseco's coming to Ottawa. He's coming to Ottawa for a charity home run derby at Ottawa Stadium on May the 12th. And I imagine that we will get some more details on that from David Gourlay, who will be in with us in 2 weeks from Ottawa Champions Baseball. I cannot wait to have him in studio, Jay. David is he's up there like Shaka Brody as far as passionate baseball fans go. He was inspired to bring baseball back to Ottawa. And he's doing everything in his power. And I can't wait to hear how he's doing it. And there's a part of me that thinks that we should all listen real close, because whatever he's doing, we need to do just on a little bit bigger of a scale.
Right.
You know, they want to bring AA to Ottawa. I don't want to bring AA to Montreal. I want to bring MLB to Montreal.
Yeah.
I got to increase my salary here just by a little bit.
Yeah, we're on the same page on this. I mean, let's go big or not go anywhere at all.
Look, I want minor league baseball on the other side of the bridge. So at this time of night, I want to be able to drive in 10 minutes to a baseball stadium. I'll sit in traffic at dinner time. I don't mind. I'll go. But I'm not the guy you need.
Right.
I'm going to Ottawa to watch AA, for crying out loud. I'm going to Burlington to watch the rookie league. I'm going to Fenway this summer with Jay Farrar, even though he doesn't remember it.
Yeah, we're going to Fenway. Listen, there's a lot of people that talk about, you know, let's get a AA or a AAA team. AA and AAA team are for small towns. It's for a small community, mm-hmm. a place where they can get together. Where there's
oh, that
not
stuff
much
just
going
plays
on.
In the sticks, Jay, but yeah. not in the big city.
Well, you know what?
No, that's exactly how I feel.
Yeah, where there's a place where there's no strip clubs, where else is there to take the family at night? You go to a ball game. That's what it is. Okay?
Right.
And the people that are saying, well, I'd love to have AA baseball. I'd love to see the Stars of the future. Those are hardcore ball fans, and mm-hmm. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate that. But for the average person in Montreal, especially Montreal, major city, eighth, ninth largest city in North America, you want, I mean, the proof is with the Impact. Imagine, think about that. Just because they moved to the MLS, mm-hmm. and that's the top league in North America,
yep.
all of a sudden there's 60,000 people. Impact had been around for years and years and years.
Excuse me, Jay, but as an ardent fan, not only the host of the Kaufman Show, I was listening last week. And yeah. you asked Brian Wilde about the attendance
right.
for the second game at the Olympic Stadium, which
yes.
was against Toronto.
Yes.
One would assume, even though we know what that assumption does, is that Toronto would be the biggest draw because of the natural rivalry.
Right.
Obviously, the exception to that is when a superstar comes in, a Thierry Henry, a David Beckham, whatever you will. Listen to me talking soccer
wow.
on a Kaufman Show.
Let's
yeah.
do it. Let's do it.
23,000 did not impress me.
It didn't impress me either, but I blame that completely, and I'm telling you, completely on the Olympic Stadium. Say, okay, we'll show up for the first game, but that's enough. I don't want to go to that toilet bowl anymore. I bet you they'll be doing well at Saputo Stadium. I bet you they'll be getting a lot more people. People just want to be outside. It's Montreal. We get a week of summer. We want to be outside.
Summer on. Bring on the buzzing past.
Right.
Exactly. You said you liked the song. You know, we keep bringing
nice.
Things back. You know,
it was nice.
In case you just tuned in now, you can go to our archives on iTunes or thekaufmanshow.podbean.com and catch up on all the lovely little things you missed.
Catch up on all the stupid things I've been saying.
And you know what? It would behoove you all to go back into last week's episode and listen to Julie and Jay and Anakin Slade with Brian Wilde. Wonderful in-depth hockey talk. Brian calls the Canucks Kings series pretty bang on, if
yeah.
I remember correctly.
We see a side of Brian that we don't get to see. You know, laid back. Guy's a cool guy.
Damn straight
he's
he is.
He's a chill guy, and you could tell from that interview. We had a really good time talking to him, and it was a lot of fun.
You see, now, when people start tweeting at you on air, if you're listening and you hear, like, if I start engaging in a conversation with somebody, like the way before I was like, yes, Travis Canseco is coming to Ottawa. I know there was no context to that, but it works. We just got another one. Fenway at the end of June, Blue Jays series, that's where I'll be. Oh, throwing smoke. I don't think Jay can come at the end of June. It's going to have to be in August.
Who tweeted that?
Melissa Couto, baseball writer out of Toronto. She was, she's been all over the place. She's been in the Toronto Sun. She's a whole bunch of fine, reputable publications.
No, I don't think I get my vacation until August.
Okay.
But unfortunately, I would love to. I mean, you know what? I don't care about the Blue Jays. I really don't.
Well, no.
I'm being honest with you. I really don't.
You're allowed.
Yeah, they're another team to me. I don't care who I see at Fenway.
As long as it's not the Nationals, right?
As long as it's, I don't care, even if it's the Nationals.
Yeah?
I don't care.
Strasburg.
I'll make a sign.
Sorry, but
it would be Strasburg in the Nationals. I'd love to see that.
I made that choice last Wednesday, man. I went to Letterman instead. Strasburg was pitching a matinee at New Shea at Citi Field, and I thought, I'm going to go see Magic Johnson and Larry Bird. And you know, if Strasburg doesn't blow out his shoulder again. Maybe I'll see him pitch next year.
Well, he's only, what, 23, so hopefully.
Yeah, he could doesn't. Have, this could be a nice long career ahead of us. This could be, he could be the new Walter Johnson in Washington.
Yeah, well, Walter Johnson had an elastic arm.
He did.
I mean, his arms went past his knees. His arms were so long. And that's really the key for a pitcher with longevity, like Randy Johnson.
His long arms?
Long, rubbery arms. When you've got short, stubby arms as a pitcher, usually you're going to have a lot of elbow problems. I'm not a doctor. But, yeah. Tommy John surgery, things of that nature. You need to have just a rubber arm that is made out of nothing. No bones, no tendons, something that you could use.
Well, it looks like Tommy John surgery for Brian Wilson.
There you go.
Yeah, which is bad news for
the Beach Boys.
That too. That will affect the Beach Boys tour. Thank you, Jay.
Gentlemen, can I just add something about the Roger?
Yes, Mr. Kakalakis.
About the Roger Clemens trial.
Yes.
Prosecutors, it seems they'll be calling up on Barry Bonds and Jose Canseco as witnesses.
Unbelievable.
Get your back hair ready and your turtles.
Your taxpayer dollars at work, America. Come on up to Canada where we run things properly.
That's right.
Yes. No. I wanted that pause there. Okay. That was important to me.
Yeah.
Supposed to sit there for a second.
Okay.
And people go, yeah, wait.
And take it in.
Oh, wait. Right. Those F-35s. So hold on a second. We're losing our freedoms by the second. What? Jimmy, play a song? What? Yeah. Yeah. Let's play a song and let's go to news. And then let's be by Travis Reitzman.
Seems anxious.
I want to go see Oshiaga. I want to watch our boys, the Arkells, kill it in Montreal. I want to do the show on the Monday night. I want the Arkells to join us in studio because they'll be in Montreal. And then I want you, me, and the band to go down to Fenway and watch some baseball.
Wow.
That's my little plan. It was a secret.
I want to hold that Juno.
You want to hold that Juno?
I want to hold that Juno.
I'll talk to Nick. I'll see what you can
too.
Do. This is Agent Zero, final track on the new Arkells album. And this is The Kaufman Show. We'll be back. Back to the Kaufman Show. That is the Ballad of Hugo Chavez from Arkells. Yeah, there's a method to my madness, Jay.
Yeah.
Our next guest is he's a good friend of the show. He's a good friend of mine. I spent a very late night on the telephone with him. Was that Saturday night or Sunday night, Travis?
I don't know. I'm actually just trying to fish the aliens out of my soup.
Oh, fair enough.
Wow.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. Jay, you want to deal with that one?
No, I think I've dealt with it enough already.
Okay.
Yeah, that was Saturday night because it was the night I worked with her. Got to see Sloan.
That's right. That must have been hey, Sloan, man, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, right on, eh?
they're cool. They're a cool band.
Damn straight. You're a big you were a big fan, right?
Well, yeah.
All right. Cool. Cool. Well, before we piss off Halifax as much as you pissed off America last week.
Oh, man.
Welcome back to the program.
How you guys doing?
We're great. Unlike you, unlike someone, you blew up in the last 2 weeks, Travis. Your profile greatly, greatly grew, and we appreciate that you're still willing to come on with us in the wee small hours of the morning.
Well, I know that I'm getting pretty huge now. You
That's
know,
right. You're a pretty big deal in Windsor, aren't you?
I'm a huge deal. You don't even know.
Well, I imagine that a few more people are paying attention to you, like, you know, Homeland Security.
Yeah, I imagine that I'm on some lists that I wasn't on before.
Have the death threats ceased?
Yeah, I only got the one, but
only the one, huh?
Only the one death threat.
You're no Hank Aaron. You're no Hank Aaron.
No, I'm no Hank Aaron. But I gotta tell you, I've never had a death threat before. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's a common occurrence for some people, but it's just I've never had anybody threaten my life, and I gotta tell you, it's not that fun.
How do you think Fidel feels?
Really? Yeah. He's got other problems.
why don't you fill everybody in on what we're talking about? Travis wrote an article last week for Getting Blanked at The Score, which is the premier baseball blog in the country, and it ruffled some feathers.
Yeah, Ozzie Guillen was suspended for 5 games by the Miami Marlins for saying some, I'll admit, ill-advised, not particularly smart things about Fidel Castro, the former president of Cuba. And, so he was suspended by his team. He basically said that, he apparently said, I love Fidel Castro, and then added some context by saying, I actually respect him for staying in power for so long in the face of intense international pressure, something along those lines. It wasn't that articulate because it's Ozzie Guillen, but he said some things. It was pretty benign. Unfortunately, he is the manager of the Miami Marlins, and there's one topic you should probably avoid while being the manager of the Miami Marlins. That's probably it.
We all know what happened when Jim Leland started attacking Elian Gonzalez. So, precedent should have taken hold there.
Yeah. So, and I mean, anytime you mention Cuba in anything other than a completely negative light in the United States, and to an extent here in Canada, you get the media backlash, which he certainly did. He's still getting.
I've never noticed that in Canada, Travis.
It's not quite as harsh here, certainly, but it's, I mean, you could argue it's getting worse in some corners. But,
well, perhaps in the political or diplomatic corners, yeah. I mean, the previous government, starting back with Pierre Trudeau, was very supportive of Cuba.
Yes, yeah, that's true.
Those days are kind of over, but there's so much financial infrastructure that is Canadian in Cuba right now. There's so much business done between the two countries.
Yeah, there's quite a bit.
In fact, Cuba's largest trading partner is the United States of America. That's something that people fail to realize.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, they have a rather infamous prison on their soil, and when the moment is right, business is okay with Cuba, but it has to be the right kind of business, you know.
Well, you mean like tourism?
well,
or
not
baseball.
For Well, not for Americans, but yeah.
What I find odd is that Guillen made very similar comments 4 years ago, but he was managing the White Sox at the time, so nobody paid attention.
Yes, yeah, I actually didn't know that. I know that he's in the past. He said, "Viva Chavez!" after the White Sox won the World Series in 2005.
Yep.
Obviously, being from Venezuela as he is, and he is apparently a moderate supporter of Hugo Chavez.
Supposedly he was and spoke out against them, and then a few days later was like, what? What are you talking about? I never said those things. My wife would never allow me to feel that way.
This is the thing. If you're relying on Ozzie Guillen for intelligent political commentary, I'd suggest you've got some problems.
Yeah, you're better off with Travis Reitzma.
Or Jose Canseco.
There you go, Jose Canseco. I'm pretty sure he's really mad at Eisenhower for stealing his couch or something.
Dreyer goes on the left, Travis. Canseco wants to run for president now on a totally unrelated note.
this does not surprise me.
Well, he can't run for president because he's from Havana.
Well, he'd find a way.
He could play for Cuba at the World Baseball Classic. He should go back to Cuba. That's what Jose Canseco should do. He should go play in Cuba.
He'll fit right in.
Yes.
Yeah. They'll like him down there.
like them down there. Yeah, I know you said before that you have begrudging respect for Canseco.
I just have a very soft spot in my heart for him for how he made feel when I was a little kid.
As a player, I mean, you know, we got to see him in Toronto for 1 year later in his career, and he hit something like 46 home runs or 44 home runs or something crazy. I mean, as a player, he was great. I don't know, as a man, it's all like, domestic abuse charges, all kinds of things. I don't know. I mean, I don't know him personally or anything, but get the impression he's not
a great dude. I don't think I'd be on the phone with him on a Saturday night till late. I don't think he'd be able to.
I would, just for the entertainment value. What else am I going to be doing?
Well, next time Jose is done doing sound at the Sloan concert, I'll tell him to give you a shout.
Great, thank you.
No, you bring up the domestic abuse, and I have to say I totally glossed that over in my mind, and that's completely unfair.
Well, it wasn't meant to be a shot at you or anything.
No, but
like that.
I remember now that I go back to it, it was him crashing his Lamborghini or Corvette or something and beating the crap out of Esther Canseco.
First world problems.
Yeah, it's but you know what? That is a major fault that a lot of us do, and. Yeah, I'm
beat on Esther Canseco?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, but gloss over the things that we choose to gloss
right.
over. And, you know, I mean, Canseco one day, hopefully very, very long away from now, will have an obituary written, and that will figure prominently.
That's true, and it's good.
The negatives, you know, the fallen hero. What's screwed up is that in the States, you get into a lot more trouble for bashing Cuba than you do for beating your wife.
Yeah. Or, I mean, in the case of Luke Scott, of the Tampa Bay Rays, came out last year, I think, that
Obama's not from America.
Well, there's that. But, I mean, you know, let him think his crazy things. But he also, it came out in the same story about throwing banana chips at a Dominican teammate, Felix P.A., and calling him a savage.
Really?
But he doesn't get suspended. You know, I mean, like, this is the sort of thing, a little hypocritical.
Wow.
Go look up that story.
I have every intention of it. Poor Felix P.A., one of my favorite names in baseball. It's spelled pie.
I know, and they used to put the pie symbol up for his number in, I think, Yankee Stadium or something.
Well, that's kind of clever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess us baseball nerds kind of dug that, right?
Us mathematic nerds, yeah.
Travis, when Nick Dyka from Arkell sent out that tweet to you and I today, saying that he was having a drink at the location at the Hilton in Dallas, the site of the 2011 winter meetings, what went through your mind?
It's funny because I read it, and the first thing that went through my mind was Jason Parks. He's a co-host of Baseball Perspectives' podcast, the Up and In podcast. He said something about how it was like that hotel was New Money Dallas, and how he hated it. And that, like, honestly, that's the thing that went through my mind when he said that. I was like, oh yeah, Jason Parks, he hated that hotel.
I picture Jeff Loria getting a bill for a round of drinks that was so much that he decided that he no longer wanted Prince Fielder on the Marlins. And then I thought to myself, it's 2:00 Eastern, which means that it's noon in Dallas. What are they doing having a drink at the hotel at noon on a Monday?
Rockstar life.
Oh, wow. Sounds so sublime, doesn't it?
He wanted Juno. He can do whatever the hell he wants.
Yeah, Jay wants to touch it.
I wouldn't, that sounds kind of weird.
It does. When he said it, I just said, I'll ask Nick. I mean, I don't know.
I'll take whatever I can get.
I don't know. That's like your weekly line. I love it. A week doesn't go by.
We do a segment.
So, Travis, there's so much to talk about in the world of baseball. And I think that before we start, we're going to go to school.
Okay.
Because this is something I've been wanting you to do for a long time. I feel as if Montreal and forgiveness, please, to anybody outside of Montreal that listens to our show on a regular basis. We know you are out there, and we love you for it. But I feel like Montreal has been passed by with these new stats in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
The baseball prospectus stuff only really became big once the Expos were leaving town.
That's true, actually, yeah.
And because of that, there are a few things. I feel like there is no Expos blog community because of it. the online community is very much more a patchwork than you see in other major league.
Geez, I wonder if that
in real major league cities. Pardon?
I wonder if that would have affected them leaving if there had been the social media and online presence of baseball.
Something I have thought about for many hours. And just from a cathartic point of view, man, do I wish Twitter was around when the Expos were leaving. I would have felt so much
less alone.
I felt so alone, and I would have felt so much less alone. There was no Twitter. There was no Facebook. There was nowhere outside of the Olympic Stadium for you to go and sort of share that glance with somebody and be like, yeah, you get it. And one of those things is that I feel like people consider me a baseball guy, somebody who knows baseball. I'm not very up on the up and up with these stats. So I feel like we're going to either once a week or once every couple of weeks, you're going to teach us a new way of analyzing the baseball, analyzing the game.
All right. I should preface it by saying that I myself am relatively new to this stuff.
Oh, great, great. So we got some amateur here to teach us. Perfect.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on, you're the expert, Travis.
I've only really been up on it for maybe 2 years.
Okay.
A little more than 2 years. That's when I first picked up a copy of Baseball Prospectus's annual. And I went through it and saw a lot of acronyms I didn't understand. And I investigated and found out there's this whole world of baseball that I just wasn't paying attention to.
Right. Not the baseball that's on the back of the baseball cards, which I don't even know if they have anymore. But
they do, I think, somewhere.
Oh, good.
But, yeah, no, definitely not those stats. So, basically, I guess I'll talk about just a couple really basic theories. Basic things. Tonight.
Baby steps, Travis, please. You know who you're dealing with.
But I'll first talk about a metric that's called wins above replacement. It's become quite a popular thing in a lot of baseball language, and it's actually starting to break into more mainstream circles as well. It's being used a lot on ESPN, these sorts of things. And basically, wins above replacement, or WAR, as it's called, is... It's a metric that's sort of an all-encompassing metric. Every single player has a WAR rating, pitcher, relief pitcher, hitter, doesn't matter. And it tries to take into account everything that a player does on a baseball team to contribute to his team winning. And so basically, you get this number that represents the number of wins that a certain player represents over a replacement player.
Now, replacement player, would that be like a AAA player or the average major leaguer?
Bench guy, maybe?
No, it's not the average major leaguer. That's a different thing altogether. But the replacement player is literally the guy that you would call up from AAA and plug into the lineup to replace him, or the guy is sitting on the bench that you would plug in and replace him. Not a particularly good baseball player, but a replacement guy, the guy you're going to throw in there. It's a theoretical sort of notion of what a replacement player is. That can give you some kind of idea of where the baseline is, zero is. An average player would be about, over the course of a season, about 2 wins above replacement.
Okay.
A good player being the 4 to 5 range, an all-star in the 6 range, and a Hall of Fame caliber player would routinely put up 7, 8, 9 WAR seasons in their prime.
All right, so who led the league in wins above replacement last year?
Oh, geez, you're putting me on the spot.
Well, but it would be a Pujols or a Jose Bautista or a...
I believe it was Jacoby Ellsbury last year. And it should also be noted there are actually 3 different this is why it can be kind of confusing. There are actually 3 different stats for wins above replacement. One of them is kept on a site called Fangraphs, which if you're a baseball fan, you've never been on Fangraphs.com, go there now. It's amazing. It has a glossary of all of these new age stats. It tells you what they are, how they come about them. It's really great. They have a version of it, and baseballreference.com has another version, and Baseball Prospectus has a version called WARP, which is just basically wins above replacement player. So there are 3 different stats, and they all take different things into account. They're all slightly different. But by Fangraphs' version of WAR last year, it was Jacoby Ellsbury, I believe.
Okay, I can give you Baseball References was Matt Kemp with a WAR of 10.
Yeah, he had kind of a crazy year.
Verlander and Bautista were tied number 2 with 8.5. Ryan Braun 7.7, Clayton Kershaw 7.6. So 10 means that if Matt Kemp wasn't in the lineup, the Dodgers would have won 10 less games last year.
Essentially, yeah.
And I mean, they're marginal wins. So like a team that's filled with replacement players, and there have been studies that have been done on this, a theoretical team that's filled with replacement level players would be about a 42 to 45 win team.
Oh, wow.
So
62 Mets territory there.
Yeah, I mean, and that sort of tells you just how random baseball is. Even a team filled with guys who probably shouldn't even be in the major leagues would still win 45 games, which is pretty remarkable. But
you know what? The way I've always kind of looked at it is that you win 54, you lose 54, and the other 54 are up in the air, and that's where you see who the good teams are and who the bad teams are.
Exactly, yeah.
At least that's the way I like to look at it. It simplifies it and kind of allows you to look at the schedule not as this 162-game behemoth, which I think a lot of people have trouble wrapping their head around. I can only imagine the people in the fan cave right now watching that number at 2,000 only going down by 10 or 15 every day.
Yeah, you know, and I would love to do it, especially if they're willing to pay me any kind of money.
Right.
But, man, I don't know if I'd make it.
Oh, come on.
Honestly, I think by about July, I'd be like, just please anything other than baseball for a day. Just for a day, you know?
Well, it's not like they're being tortured there. I mean, you're making it sound like the little patch of land that you said that the Americans own in Cuba. I don't think, a 15,000 square foot, they've got a home run slide. They've got a fridge full of beer. It's a pretty good life in there.
Okay, well, the beer would make it totally doable.
Actually, I'll tell you what the coolest thing they had is something called a dirt bar. You can take vials of dirt from every major league park. So I got to add to my collection, guys. I now have dirt from the three oldest parks in the majors.
Does the dirt look different
between them?
One more redder than the other?
I have not put them up to a light one against. You know what? Next week,
take
we'll
them over to McGill.
We'll do show and tell next week, and I will bring in dirt from Fenway, dirt from Wrigley, and dirt from Dodger Stadium.
We should get a geologist here.
Should we?
Yeah, with a microscope. That will make for entertaining radio,
oh,
ladies and gentlemen.
Goodness. I
think Winds Above Replacement is entertaining. Wait till you get that.
Geology.
Wow. We'll talk about that with them as well.
I was really encouraged when I was at Western and screwing around to take rocks for jocks. I feel like maybe that would come in handy right
now. Nice.
So, Travis, we have discussed war, and what I find interesting is it's a stat that, Kemp is there, number one on the list, and number two is a pitcher. So obviously they have a way to calibrate this that it affects everybody.
Yeah, and it's certainly not perfect, and there's criticisms that can be made about each, and I won't get into those because they involve things that don't make good radio.
Okay.
Are
you sure about that?
I'm pretty sure, but a lot of math, and I don't even fully understand it, so it would just be a mess of me trying to figure it out.
Deal. Because if you were doing a math tutorial right now, I would just, I think I'd take my headphones off.
And I have a communications degree. I'm not a mathematician.
Perfect.
But the good thing about war is it allows us to compare players within different eras. So we can see, like, for instance, Burt Blyleven got into the Hall of Fame last year, and a big reason for that was because for the longest time, people were looking at his pitcher wins, which are a totally useless stat, and saying he doesn't get in the Hall of Fame, but Jack Morris should. And the sabermetric community kind of is starting to get a little bit of sway, and suddenly they're saying, hey, you should look at this other stat, WAR, where Burt Blyleven is clearly better than a lot of pitchers in the Hall of Fame currently, so he should be in there too. And it was a big reason he got in, obviously not just WAR alone, but it's one of those stats you can kind of compare players across eras and see who was better, and it's really cool that way. So
I wonder who has the highest WAR of all time.
I believe it's Barry Bonds.
That makes sense.
It's either Barry Bonds or Babe Ruth. It's one of the two.
Okay, so then at least they've got that part of it right.
Yeah, and they actually did a study, and Baseball Prospectus released a book called Baseball Between the Numbers, which is a sequel out to now. And they did a study in there where they compared the two and asked the question, who was better? And it's a really cool little study. They talk about what the different eras entailed. Obviously, Babe Ruth wasn't playing black players.
Right.
So the pool was much smaller. Like there was, and the pitching was different. The skill level was totally different. So, and it did actually end up coming out that Bonds was a little better. So even when you factor in Babe Ruth's pitching career, so...
Oh, yeah, of course. Wow. Okay. I you know what? I need to pick up that book, and I need to. I know that book was edited by Jonah Carey.
It was, and it's a fantastic book. It's a really good read. It's not really numbers heavy for people who are afraid of that kind of stuff. It's very narrative based, and it's an excellent read. So.
I'll tell you, that was a concern to me, considering that the book is called Baseball Between the Numbers.
Well, it's just that it's between the numbers. They'll give you a chart here and there, but for the most part, they're explaining why RBIs don't matter, for instance, or why saves don't matter, or those sorts of things. And it's really interesting, especially if you grew up like I did, you know, looking at those stats and evaluating players based on them, to kind of have your brain sort of shook a little bit, you know?
We're in conversation with Travis Reitzma from Getting Blanked at the Score. We're picking his brain about baseball, and we just learned about war. Huh. Good God, y'all. What is it good for?
Lots of stuff in the baseball.
It seems so, yeah. Absolutely everything.
You want to give us one more?
Sure. This one's a little more controversial, and still, even within the sabermetric community, there's still a lot of debate. But I'm not sure when it was. I'm thinking late 80s, early 90s. A man named Voros McCracken came up with something called DIPS theory, D-I-P-S.
Wait, there's somebody named Voros McCracken?
There is, in fact.
Who came out of the DIT theory?
DIP.
Oh, DIP. Yes. Okay.
That makes a lot more sense. Yeah.
It stands for Defensive Independent Pitching Statistics.
Okay.
And basically, he came up with a theory that said pitchers do not have any control over where a ball is hit. And they don't have, like, the only thing a pitcher truly has control over is the ability to strike people out, the ability to walk people or not walk people, and the ability to suppress home runs. That's the only skill the pitcher can possess. And remarkably, it sounds crazy, but a lot of the time, even still to this day, it works out. So if you look at a pitcher's strikeout rate, walk rate, and home run rate, you can get a good idea of what kind of a pitcher he is, regardless of what his other numbers say. And a lot of research is coming out now. Obviously, ground balls are better than fly balls, and line drives are worse than both, and there's all kinds of crazy stuff. Still really great research going on, but it was one of those theories that sort of made people completely change the way they think about pitching.
I see that, and I'm trying to wrap my head around it. It makes a lot of sense, because obviously, you know, I guess that would give Armando Galarraga the perfect game in that situation, right?
Yeah, exactly. Basically, it led to another, the stat always existed, but a different interpretation of it called BABIP, which is batting average on balls in play.
BABIP.
And basically that...
Maybe this is part of it. Just all these acronyms are so ridiculous. I mean, you know, RBI is ingrained in my brain. It makes sense to me.
And it sounds robust. You know, RBI, with dips, not so much.
Dips.
So essentially, Voros McCracken's theory stipulated that...
See, no, everything's ridiculous. I want to take this seriously, but all the names prevent it.
It's like a porn star doing baseball evaluations and... I don't know.
Really?
Boris McCracken?
Oh, okay. I thought we were talking about Travis Reitzman a second there.
Well, no. That's not my point.
Him too. He'll take whatever he can get.
I'm sorry, Travis. I'm sorry.
Okay. So anyway, we'll just call him McCracken. Sure. I know it's still hard, but...
Can we say release the McCracken?
No.
Okay.
No. So anyway, McCracken's theory basically stipulated that if a pitcher had a batting average on balls in play that was much higher or lower than about 300, that would eventually regress, which means that if a pitcher had a really, really good year but a really, really low batting average on balls in play, the next year he probably wasn't going to have as good a year, because that batting average on balls in play would regress toward 300.
Huh.
So essentially, I mean, it's never that simple. Some pitchers have shown the ability to constantly suppress their batting average on balls in play. Roy Halladay comes to mind. Greg Maddux comes to mind.
Okay, but you're naming Hall of Famers now, right?
Exactly. Like, yeah. These are outliers. These are the most pitchers are going to regress somewhere close to 300 for the most part. And so it's a really good indicator. If you look at a guy and you look at his batting average on balls in play, and he had a really good year and his batting average on balls in play was like 235, you can probably figure he's not going to be as good next year. It's really handy for fantasy baseball.
Everybody understand that out there in Radio Land? I'm trying to wrap my head around it right now, and I think the great litmus test for this, Mr. Reitzma, is going to be next week when you teach us two new things, and quiz us on these two. So I think you'll get to see Jay looks terrified.
I skip class like I did in grade 9 math.
Yeah, but it's baseball.
I'm telling you, if you're interested in this stuff, you know, go read up about it because I'm not the authority by any means.
You got to stop doing this, man. I'm plugging you as the authority on my show. You can't come on and be like, well, you know, don't talk to me about it.
Well, no, if you want to ask me about stuff that's going on in baseball, I'm great at that. But in terms of advanced mathematical theory about dips theory, I just can't.
Well, trust me.
I can do it, but I can't do it the way.
Anything I'm asking you, Travis, is because A, I respect your opinion, and B, because I genuinely don't know myself. So you have taught us almost more than we can wrap our heads around tonight. And we're probably the two most sober people listening to this show right now. So we appreciate that.
Speak for yourself, Kaufman.
Fine, I will. I am the most sober person listening to this show right now because, unlike all of you at home, I have to participate in it. So, Travis, why don't we talk a little bit in a couple of minutes we have left about what's going on now. And the first thing that sort of jumped out of my at me this weekend was Brett Laurie's bonehead play.
The one where he attempted to steal home?
Yeah.
There was a lot of great tributes to Jackie Robinson this week.
That was not one of them.
Totally not one of them. It should be noted too, we still don't really know, and I'm not sure, maybe it's come out and I just missed it. We don't know if it was his choice, if it was John Farrell that sent him. We don't really know. Unless it did come out, maybe it did and I missed it. Maybe he took responsibility for it. I'm not sure. I'm sure he was asked about it. But yeah, I mean, come on. Bases loaded, two out, and the best home run hitter in the world at the plate. What are you doing?
It had to have been a missed signal.
Well,
maybe,
you know,
but you're standing beside the third base coach. How do you miss a signal?
in defense of the base coach and of Brett Laurie, as a former player, there's a lot of little things that you see. And it might have been just something that the third base coach said, go, 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 go. We don't know what, and maybe they don't want to waste time explaining it to the media. But there's sometimes in baseball, there are little intricacies that people don't realize. And they say, he saw something, he saw a hole, and they took a chance. I mean, that's giving them the benefit of the doubt, of course.
Sure.
Oh, for sure. But I still think, I mean, now if you have... If you're on third base with one out or two outs and you have a pitcher hitting or something and you want to make something happen, I am totally game for that. You know, just not with Jose Bautista at the plate and the bases loaded. The game was close. They needed the runs. Why you would take a risk like that, I have no idea. And he got caught stealing later in the game in a similar situation at second base. I believe it wasn't Bautista hitting, but... It's a similar sort of situation where he probably shouldn't have been running. And then
not the kid's greatest shining moment so far in a Jays uniform.
No, and I mean, I've been a big not Brett Laurie detractor. I think he's going to be a very good player, but trying to tell people to sort of temper their expectations just a little bit because what he did last year was only 43 games, and rules of small sample size will tell you that he may not do that for a whole year. We don't know yet, so...
No, and rarely do you see somebody who's only played 43 games have so much hype and just the expectations of Toronto are on his shoulders. He's
Canada in a lot of ways.
Maybe not Montreal, but you know, he didn't exactly endear himself to the Montreal public when I interviewed him and said, "So, tell me about your baseball memories of Montreal." Well, that guy who played for the Orioles last year, Vlad. Yeah, Vlad and all those guys.
Yikes.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I feel like
well,
next,
I mean,
next
I
year before the caravan, AA better give him a little primer on what went down.
Again, it's like the Ozzie Guillen thing. I don't know if you should be asking certain questions of Brett Laurie. I mean, he seems like a nice enough kid, but, you know.
No, but, you know, I mean, I was literally trying to throw up a softball to him.
Yeah.
You know, talk a little about Larry Walker, talk a little about, Pedro Martinez. Give me something, man, you know?
Yeah. Well, he is from BC, to be fair. I mean, he's probably more a Mariners fan than he was an Expos fan, so.
Hold on, is this it? Let me, Jimmy, my computer up. Thank you, sir.
Back when I was little, I wanted to play more than watch the game. Like, I never used to watch baseball. I just wanted to play.
No, that's not it.
Okay.
All right. All right.
You want to hear a secret that might get me alienated from a lot of people? I was actually the opposite of that.
What do you mean?
I mean, don't get me wrong. I loved and still love to play baseball, but I've always enjoyed watching the game and analyzing the game and thinking about the game way, way more.
Yeah, I understand that side of it as well. I was when I was a kid, I pictured myself being the general manager that won the World Series, not the player that hit the home run.
I realized very early when I couldn't get around on a 45-mile-an-hour fastball that I was not going to make it in that game. So
let's go back to the King of Canada, Brett Laurie, one more time.
I think that we have an obligation to give back to the fans and to give back to all of Canada. They're kind enough to give us jerseys, so we're going to wear them, and we're Canada's team, so we're going to support all of Canada. But at the end of the day, I think Toronto Maple Leafs are they're our guys, and that's where it all started.
That is Vancouver Canuck fan Brett Laurie talking about supporting the Toronto Maple Leafs while wearing a Montreal Canadiens jersey. Hope you all got that, people. What was nice was that they wore the Sens jerseys at the game in Ottawa. They wore the Habs jerseys at the game in Montreal. They wore the Leafs jerseys at the game in Toronto. They wore Halifax Mooseheads jerseys at a junior game in Halifax.
Yeah, I mean, you got to commend them for their marketing efforts recently, especially with the returning to the old logo. And
I love it. I think the new old uniform looks great.
Oh, it's fantastic. I still think the Maple Leaf is a little big. I've never been big on nationalism personally.
Yeah, I can tell.
I am so with you on that.
Yeah, it's a little big, but at the same time, very small complaint, because anything is better than what we've endured the last, 8 years? Is that really 8 years?
Well, it feels like longer than that. The real ugly uniforms, like when Clemens was playing in Toronto, that was an ugly uniform.
Yeah, too much red.
Yeah.
Too much red. But at that time, I mean, a lot of teams had really bad uniforms in the late 90s and early 2000s, so...
Do you remember
Do
you remember the uniforms of the future that they came out with at one point?
Oh God, yeah, with the big logos on that were sort of off-centered and.
Yeah, it was. I think they held a weekend where they pretended that it was 100 years in the future. Griffey was allowed to play with his cap backwards. I think that game.
Yeah, the Pirates kidding. And the Rockies played a game, and they were that was awful.
Yeah, I don't know why, but the Mariners uniform sticks in my mind, and it was just. Oh, it was terrifying.
And that was right around the time the Pirates were really emphasizing the red in their uniforms, too. Remember that phase?
No. Yeah, they did.
They had that alternate red third jersey, and oh, my God, what are they? You have black and yellow might be the greatest color combination of all time for a sports uniform. You're going to go ruin it? Like,
not to mention the branding exercise that has been done so wonderfully by the city of Pittsburgh, that all of their sports teams have the same color scheme.
Right.
Exactly.
I've always thought that was the coolest thing ever, and I know that Montreal... except for the Impact now, had the same thing, the Alouettes.
Red, white, and blue.
The Expos and the Habs. But it has a certain feel. Maybe it's just because it's the black and yellow. But to go from
Toronto,
a Penguins
Toronto
game.
Had it for a while, too, with blue and white. But then the Raptors came along and kind of ruined it.
That's got to change. I remember reading, I think it was through The Score from the Basketball Jones, writing how they need to get rid of the Toronto Jurassic Park Raptors name.
Yeah.
That it's just the worst nickname.
What was wrong with the Toronto Huskies?
That's what
I
was thinking.
I never understood why they can't do that. Maybe there's a copyright issue. I mean, I know that if one team is named the Huskies, some random college team will block it via copyright. Maybe that was the issue. But
well, it's not so random. That's University of Connecticut, I think.
Well,
which
is
it's a pretty big college sports powerhouse. But I don't think that's we're from a country where there were two Rough Riders amongst eight teams.
Yeah, that's because nobody cared.
You know, there's a
they didn't even bother to trademark that stuff.
How about back in the day when you could go to the Polo Grounds and see the New York baseball Giants, and then go up to the Bronx and see the New York football Giants at Yankee Stadium?
Almost like half Negro League teams had the word Giants in
that's
their
right.
name.
Well, and the name Black.
Yeah.
And Japanese teams had the same uniforms as Major League Baseball teams, like the Tokyo Giants had the same uniforms.
Right,
that's
as the New York Giants.
Still looking forward to the first time I get to go see the Iowa Ham Fighters.
The Iowa Ham. Oh, wait for it. It's going to be the Rogers Blue Jays in about 20 years.
Oh, do you think that's going to happen?
I hope not, because that might be what does it for me.
You know what we messed up when we go see the Rogers Bell Maple Leafs?
Oh, God.
Wow.
Not even. No, they'll merge by then. There'll be something more horrible.
No, I'll get us tickets to go see the, they'll be playing the Peladon Nordiques.
Yeah.
And
what station am I on right now? TSN.
This is a part of the Bell Media family, correct?
So I should maybe not get myself on another list tonight.
You know what? The list you've already you're on, my man. It's I feel like I'm talking to Elia Kazan here. It's
honestly, get Dave Zirin on your show. The guy is
I would
incredible.
Love to get Dave Zirin. Does he follow you on Twitter?
No, but we do have correspondence through email. I've sent him your information, so I don't know. He's busy and
he's pretty awesome and does the kind of journalism that I really admire.
Yeah, he melds sports and politics in a way that, and he's a fantastic writer. He's one of my favorite writers.
In a way that doesn't get him fired.
Yeah, well, he doesn't work for anybody specifically, so except for The Nation, which is an alternative media thing anyway. So,
in the meantime, Travis, please keep fighting the good fight. I did not agree with all of your article on Cuba, namely the fact that the average salary there is $15 a month, and that means you have to save up for a very long time. You may be allowed to leave the island, but they sure make it hard. And
But is it? I don't want to start anything particularly long right now, obviously. But
that's okay. We're not going anywhere.
You gotta ask whether or not that's Cuba or whether or not that's the U.S. trade embargo that's been on the country for 50 years that has really hamstrung them economically. And I would argue that that's more of a reason why they are poor, but not desperately poor, but poor.
I agree that the man, I thought that embargo was going to be lifted when the president was inaugurated. The next day, President Obama, I was actually in Cuba during President Obama's inauguration and watched most of it at the hotel bar on BBC.
Mm-hmm.
And the next day he held a press conference and said that within 90 days, Guantanamo will be closed.
Yeah, well, how's that going?
Well, the road to good intentions, right?
Yeah.
Or the road to hell is paved with good intentions? I don't know. Whichever.
If you want to read an interesting story, go read about how Guantanamo even is able to exist on Cuban soil. That's an interesting one there.
Well, it all has to do with the USS Maine being blown up in 1896.
Yep.
So I think we should end this on a serious note. And Travis, in honor of... pick a crappy baseball team.
The Houston Astros.
Yeah, them.
Yeah, Mo, that team sure did suck last night. They just plain sucked. I've seen teams suck before, but they were the suckiest bunch of sucks that ever sucked.
Homer, watch your mouth.
I gotta go. My damn wiener kids are listening.
You can find Travis Reitzman's writings on getting blanked at the score, as well as runs batted out. We will. I'll start blogging for you soon. I just, I need a little inspiration. What can I say? My life is so boring that I need some inspiration.
Take your time. I won't be writing there much this week because I have a rather large academic deadline I have to meet. But
Your thesis is due, right?
The main draft is due on Thursday, and I'm not close yet. So
you better get at it. And if you need a late night pep talk, I'm your man. And in the meantime, I'm really excited for you to have that thesis so that we can be joined by baseball expert Dr. Travis Reitzman.
No, well, not quite. I haven't been in school that long yet.
Oh, we can fake it, man. This is radio. Nobody can see you.
I can be a master of baseball. That almost sounds cooler.
A master of, that's amazing. Yes. Baseball master, Travis Reitzman. Thank you for your time tonight.
Thank you, guys.
We'll catch you soon.
Talk to you soon.
All right. There he goes. Travis Reitzman from The Score. Runs batted out. Comrade Travis Reitzman.
Whoa. Whoa.
Come on now. It's all in good fun. I think he's probably going to go and look up Ilya Kazan now.
Ilya Kazan?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
We
could have given a background on that.
We could have.
He could have watched the Academy Awards.
That's right.
A few years ago.
Or maybe attended a HUAC meeting.
Yeah.
And, thank God that there's no Joe McCarthy, because that'll allow us to keep getting knowledge from the sponge that is Travis.
Is there
Reitzman.
No Joe McCarthy?
Oh, there's so many McCarthys out there, man. Yeah. Come on. Well, not in this studio, that's for damn sure.
Nope.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. Everybody's feeling good. Everybody's awake. John, you're good?
Wide awake.
All right, Jay, you're awake?
I'm yes.
Jimmy, how are you, sir?
That's great. HUAC, I know what that means. I'm not sure if John and Jay know what that means.
The
House of Un-American Activities.
There you go. Thank you. Oh, Canada. You bet your love. This is the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, Jimmy G on the board, John Kakalakis helping us out. Let's take some calls. Let's fill up those phone lines. I miss you all. Away for a week. Want to hear your voices. Let's interact. Still miles to go on the Kaufman Show. We'll be back.
Let's go make a picture on the island of Stromboli. Ingrid Bergman, you're so pretty. You'd make any mountain quiver. You'd make fire fly from the crater. Ingrid Bergman, this old mountain, it's been waiting all its life.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, Jimmy G on the board, John Kakalakis helping us out. Yes, I am surrounded once again by Greeks.
Can't get away.
No, I can't.
Christos Anesti to all my fellow Greeks out there.
A happy Easter to everybody. It's not just Greeks, right? It's Orthodox Easter.
Orthodox, yeah.
Yeah,
Russians, Romanians, Ukrainians.
Yes, I once dated a girl with a Romanian stepmother, and we showed up at their house for Easter.
Sounds evil.
It was, let me tell my story. We show up for Easter dinner, and we show up at, like, I don't know, let's say 3 o'clock. And she says something along the lines of, oh, good, you're here. Let me just put the lamb in. It'll be 6 hours.
Yeah.
It was delicious.
I was going to say, at 3 o'clock, they're still killing the damn thing.
Jay, all I wanted to do was turn around, drive home, and come back in 5.5 hours. So, anyways, we don't go there anymore. That was Ingrid Bergman, by the way, bringing us in. Not quite Elia Kazan, but of the same era. That was Woody Guthrie and Wilco. Woody Guthrie and Wilco. Billy Bragg and Wilco interpreting Woody Guthrie, Mermaid Avenue. Wonderful, wonderful album that they actually came out with a volume 2, and I never picked it up, and I need to. Let's take some phone calls. We've got some friends on the line, people we haven't spoken to in a little while. Yay. I'm so excited. It is my favorite, and please, none of you take offense to this, but Conrad is my favorite caller.
Thank you.
Good evening, Conrad.
Very well. You know, when you were speaking just a few minutes ago, two things came to mind. You were talking about the stealing of third base. In 1949, my buddy of mine and myself followed the Yankees from Chicago to Detroit to Cleveland. And we were in Cleveland, and it was fairly late in the season. And there was Cleveland, and the Yankees were tied for first place. And Larry Doby gets a single. The next guy gets a single and drives him to third base. Ninth inning, man on third, man on first, nobody out, and Doby tries to steal home. Cleveland never recovered.
Oh, Larry Doby was not Jackie Robinson.
Well, of course. But that story of him stealing from third with one out reminded me of that one in Cleveland.
The things that you remember from being there, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
That was 63 years ago.
Yeah, 49.
And sounds pretty vivid to you.
Yeah. The other thing that I wanted to discuss with you, you're talking about Montreal's a big city and that we should have a Major League Baseball team.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing would make me happier. We don't have the money in the city.
I know.
You know, we lost the Expos. In a sense, they didn't do it on purpose. But Gary was the one that caused us to lose the Expos because he grabbed the offer from the Mets, and Bronfman, who had treated him really like a son, he brought him to his house. He was in love with the guy. He took the money, ran. He never even said goodbye.
Well, he was traded, Conrad. You're making it sound like...
No, was he traded?
Yeah, he was traded. Gary Carter was traded to the New York Mets.
Well,
the Expos got back Hubie Brooks
well, the reason
and Mike Fitzgerald.
Well, let me put it to you this way.
Floyd Yeomans.
Yeah, but he couldn't afford to pay what Gary got in the way of salary.
Well, he could afford to. He owned Seagram's.
He
chose not to. He did not want to be in the business of making baseball players rich.
That's right. That's exactly what he said.
Charles Bronfman saw the future. He saw the way that the economics of the game of baseball were headed. And like any smart businessman, he got out.
Well, that's the point. When he got out, there was nobody to take over. And
right.
And the teams that were competitive up until that period of time suddenly were not competitive. And you know, Montreal, if you don't have a competitive team, they're not interested.
But, Conrad, there are many people in this city with the money. They don't have the passion.
You know, I suppose. I don't think they have the point is you have to have a conglomerate. One guy may be the main financier, but all these teams have at least three or four people in there with money that they're ready to invest.
Sure, Magic Johnson doesn't have $2 billion. The Guggenheim Group has the majority.
I was just going to mention him. So the resulting situation is that there was nobody here, and especially once he was gone, there was absolutely nobody here. But you know, when we had the Royals, the stadium used to be filled.
No, you see, I looked that up, Conrad, and I think that's not true. When the Royals were here in 1946 and Jackie Robinson was playing, the stadium was filled. But before that and after that, the Royals were not the huge success. I think it was more in the 5,000 to 10,000 fans a game and not the 25 when Jackie was playing.
I remember there was a player who played for the Royals, a guy by the name of Red Dern. He was a Marine, and he got malaria when he was there. He had a great deal of talent. He came to Montreal, and I remember one playoff game in particular when the stadium was absolutely filled. They were playing against Newark, and he struck out. He was my favorite player on the team, and he struck out at least four times in that particular playoff game, and he came in the 11th inning. Everybody was booing, and I'm screaming. You know, I was young at that time. What do you mean you're screaming? He's a great player. And he even had a couple of days with the Dodgers. But he came up, and he hit a home run in the 11th inning. And, you know, suddenly he's everybody's hero. But we had reasonably decent crowds there.
But I don't think that is the example that we can give. You know, like, I don't think that, you know, I'm hoping that people don't think back to 10 years ago, let alone 60, when it comes to getting a baseball team back. The truth is, we are at the infancy stages of trying to conceptualize how we can bring baseball back to this city. I still haven't heard the million-dollar idea. I love what Cromartie's doing, bringing the team back, the 81 team back. It's going to bring a wonderful feel-good factor about baseball. The media will lap it up the weekend of June 14th to 16th. I would like to think the Stanley Cup will have already been awarded. Baseball will rule the airwaves in that city, in our city that weekend. Yeah. Now, whether that can be, pardon my gambling terms, but parlayed into something else remains to be seen. But this is, we're at a very interesting crossroads right now as baseball fans in this city. Where for the first time ever, and it sounds weird to say, Conrad, but it totally coincides with the passing of Gary Carter.
Of course. But do you know one thing? If the right approach is made to some major league team that is looking for a farm team, number three, of course, an AAA, that might be the only way we'll ever have a baseball team back.
The only city that I compare to Montreal that is a minor league baseball city is New Orleans. And New Orleans is a much smaller city than Montreal. It kind of has that same joie de vivre as Montreal does. But, look, Conrad, I know that you would go. I know that I would go. I know that Jay and Jimmy and John would all be there. I just don't see Joe Public in Montreal getting behind a minor league baseball team. I feel like there's a psychological block there. And even if it's as simple as Toronto is a major league city and how dare we consider ourselves anything less?
Well, this is the only hope. Otherwise, it's going to be a lovely affair and there's going to be a lot of interest and there's going to be a lot of talk.
There is.
And I'm afraid that's it.
Well, let's hope that the talk becomes action eventually.
Amen.
And exactly. And in the meantime, we'll keep the faith and we'll continue talking about baseball. And I love hearing your memories, Conrad. Thank you so much for the call.
My pleasure.
Catch you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Let's go to the polemicist. We've got Travis in Asheville, North Carolina, or as Jay likes to call it,
Asheville, NC.
Good evening, Travis.
Man, Conrad's awesome.
Isn't he great?
Yeah, I love that.
It's, and not even a mention of William Shatner this time. It was just a wonderful Conrad call. And
he probably is not that happy with you.
Actually, I didn't mention it, and I hope that if he's still listening, that he hears this. The last time that I heard Conrad on the radio was on Matthew Ross's show. Matthew did a segment on baseball in Montreal, and I'll tell you, it was an hour long. The best part of it was the 10 minutes that Conrad just totally owned the show.
My father was born in 1949. Think about that. And he's talking about a ball game he went to.
And he's
with
talking
a buddy.
About Larry Doby playing for the Cleveland Indians against the Yankees, and he was there. I would that have been Municipal Stadium in Cleveland? I don't even know, but this is before Cleveland won their last pennant in 1955. Yeah, it's a wonderful thing to be able to have fans, listeners like Conrad, and you better bring it, Travis. You're following in some pretty big shoes right now.
Yeah, no, I'm just helping you meet your Travis quota. You know?
Hey, I wanted to ask you a question, actually, Travis. Do you ever get down to the minor league ball games in Asheville?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. You know the particular one we got.
Do you know the pitching coach is?
I do not.
I believe it is former Montreal Expo Joey Eichen.
No kidding.
Yeah. You might have to verify that for us, but I'm pretty sure that Joey Eichen is the pitching coach right now in Asheville. It's in the Rockies organization, right?
Oh, yeah. It's the single A Rockies, yeah.
Okay.
The manager's famous because he melted down. He bit the rosin bag like it was a grenade and threw it.
Oh, I remember that guy. What's his name?
Jerry Miklick.
Yes, that was that was all over SportsCenter when that happened.
It still is. It makes every top 10 meltdown on TSN every week. That's like number two or number three. Sometimes it moves up. It's that's a joy to watch.
To spare my fair city, though, there is. I mean, Wally Backman was way better in terms of craziness.
Didn't Wally Backman do a? Didn't he pull like a Tim Johnson? Like I fought in Vietnam, but I didn't really, or I won a medal, and
There was classy stuff. The documentary series about him on YouTube about some minor team in Georgia, and he was just like losing it constantly. It was amazing.
Hey, Travis, did you check out the YouTube video of the Kaufman Show?
Of course I did. I hate hearing my own voice. God, how can you do that all day?
It's one of the things that you deal with to get to do a really awesome job. And at least of me being really self-critical, like I've tried not to laugh as much on the show today, because when I sit there and I listen to an episode and I hear myself laughing every 8 seconds, I'm like, why am I laughing so much? I sound so stupid.
Well, it makes you feel better. I know of no place, other place in North America where you can hear the 420 show and then a mortgage ad and then The Simpsons. That's amazing.
Yeah, we really pull out all the stops. Yeah,
we spread it out pretty good.
Can I tell you that I did not know that it was a 420 show until they showed up and handed me the poster that said it was a 420 show?
Just like, I don't believe you.
I swear on my life. He was just like, let me promote this show that we're doing on Friday night. And it was, I guess I should have put it all together, huh?
The views and opinions expressed are not necessarily that of Bell Media.
No, definitely not. They are those of the host and the co-host and our wonderful callers.
Oh, thanks.
So what else is going on?
You know, I was thinking about the Expo today.
Uh-huh.
Because I was looking at my jersey, and it dawned on me that, as I talked about Sonic Skate on Twitter, there is no analog to Montreal losing Expos, period, in sports, because all the other team relocations are entirely different. And nobody's plan will work. There's no blaze trail already. It has to be done at least in the beginning.
Right. So,
and that hurts.
Yeah, I was going to say thanks for ending on a high note, buddy.
Yeah, I know. I'm good with this.
It's like all you dreamers keep dreaming because it ain't going to happen. That's the call from North Carolina.
I didn't say that.
I know. But that's true. It literally, I look at the Jets, and to me, the Jets are the great.
Winnipeg's a minor league city.
Pardon?
Winnipeg's kind of a minor league city, though.
Of course it is, but for Winnipeg to get a hockey team back, I think, is akin to Montreal getting a baseball team back.
Yeah, I can see that.
I'm telling you, it was a big deal for me watching all those grown men crying when Winnipeg got their team back, running out on the streets like they won the Stanley Cup, and all I could think was, God, let that be me one day. Who cares? Don't ever give me a World Series. Let my grandchildren win the World Series. Just give me a team back that will feel like a World Series.
You know, if this helps it, if the team gets back, I will buy a season ticket and move there. I have no money. I'll sell organs, man. You
know? Great.
It's going to move from Asheville to Montreal.
Actually, I'm down.
Without an idney.
On Indy, yeah.
Travis, thanks so much for the call, man.
Cheers.
We'll catch you soon.
Later.
All right, let's keep rolling here. We've got Mike in St. Leonard. Good evening, Mike.
Good evening, guys. How are you?
We're great. How are you?
Good. Thanks for listening to your whole show. Great as always.
Thank you for sticking around for 3+ hours. We really appreciate
that. There's always some good stuff going on, you know. It's always worth listening.
Thank you very much.
Your last guest talking about the Cuba situation.
Yeah.
You know, as a Canadian myself, I was there on my honeymoon. I got to tell you, it's a reality check, because the first time I heard what had happened, I was kind of taken back a little bit. And I think it comes from just being totally insensitive, maybe for the first time in my life, to other people's plight. Because we come from such a different place of viewing Cuba as Canadians than Americans do.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just like, really? They're upset about Cuba, about Castro? Like, I'm down there on vacation. I'm not thinking about Castro. I'm not thinking about anything he's done. I've never looked it up. I never had the interest to look up the situation of Cuban Americans. And I got to tell you, it's really something that I got to take some time and think about, because off the cuff, my reaction was, I think the most Canadians' reaction would be like, what's the big deal? But, you know, people's plights are people's plights, and sometimes you have to be sensitive to that.
Absolutely. And the largest lobby group in the U.S., or at least one of the largest lobby groups in the United States, is the Cuban American community in South Florida.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know what?
There are a big reason why Miami is so Republican.
Yeah.
And a lot of it has to do with the Bay of Pigs and John F. Kennedy's treatment, which is in turn the Democrats' treatment towards the Castro government.
It's funny, Americans don't let things go away.
Yeah, because Canadians do, right?
Yeah,
you know. I have an interesting story in regards to that, to the Canadians' indifference to Fidel Castro.
Yeah.
I was at Pierre Elliott Trudeau's funeral in 2000.
And he was there in a beautiful Versace suit.
He showed up, and, you know, Fidel Castro wasn't going anywhere at that time. I mean, let alone to travel to Canada for a funeral. The second he stepped out of the limousine and started walking in the steps of the church, which is ironic in itself, people were cheering. They were cheering. There wasn't one sound of someone being displeased. There was no protest. Most of the crowd that was there, some people didn't clap or cheer. I was at Trudeau's funeral. I don't know why. That's when I cared. But but there was a rousing applause coming from the crowd that had gathered outside of the church to watch the funeral on the big screen. Not one protest. Now, can you imagine had this funeral been in New York City or somewhere else or in Miami?
My lasting memory, Jay, is after the funeral ended and Fidel Castro, I said Versace, but I'm pretty sure it was an Armani suit, was standing on the steps of the church, smiling, laughing, joking with Jimmy Carter.
Yes. Yes. I was standing right there. I mean, I was one of the first people to see Fidel Castro shake the hand of an American president, a former American president.
Things you don't see every day.
That is, and it was really, really underreported by the papers. It was a major moment, and it was very, very interesting. Can you imagine having that happen these days? I mean, it's only 12 years ago, but with the social media and the opportunity for that photograph circulating all over CNN.
It happens, and it's a big deal when it does. But diplomacy overrides and overrules in a lot of these examples.
Right.
Another one that I can think of is when the Pope passed away, and every world leader was invited to the Vatican for the funeral, and you had the not the Prime Minister of Israel, but the President of Israel shaking hands with the Ayatollah, I don't think, but it was one of the high ups in Israel and one of the high ups from Iran, sitting basically next to each other at the funeral, and they greeted each other and they shook hands, and the world flipped out. The Jewish lobby was saying, "What are you doing?" And the Iranian side was just they couldn't believe that he was shaking hands with. Are you looking at the picture? Anyways, yeah. It's
Jimmy just pulled up a picture of that moment. Wow. Yeah,
the point is that diplomacy oversteps it, and it's the way that the Libyans were still invited to William and Kate's wedding last year.
Right. Essentially, it takes somebody to die for these people to start
yes.
in front of them.
100%.
Yeah. That's Never exactly mind the right. statistics in the paper.
Or the group photo at the UN. That's another every year when they have the sessions in September and they do the group shot.
Right.
Although we'll see if Bashar al-Assad makes this one. Sorry, Mike, we went off on a bit of a tangent
that's
there.
Good. That's good because it's, you know, what you're saying is so true. On one level, it's so superficial, you know. Person to person, there's no problems. But it's almost like if the world is on this catapult and they just can't get off it as hard as they try,
right.
You know. And, I mean, that goes on with Cuba and the whole thing with the embargo as well, too.
But the thing with Cuba, Mike, and Travis actually just, our guest that you're referring to, his name is Travis Reitzma, and he writes for The Score.
Okay.
He mentioned, have you seen the photo of Peter Angelos, the Orioles owner, and Bud Selig sitting with Castro? And yes, I have, because the Orioles played a home-and-home two-game series with the Cuban national team a few years back.
Okay.
A few years back, probably about a decade ago. And the Orioles won the game in Cuba, and the Cubans won the game in Baltimore. And it was, to me, it was fantastic. It made for great, like, that's what baseball's all about.
Yeah.
And it's a shame that Ozzie Guillen is not as good at choosing his words. He's not English, first of all.
Yeah.
And I think that there was a real golden opportunity for that to be done in a way that could have opened up dialogue and not closed it down. But really, he said the same thing with the White Sox, but there's no Cuban community to roast
yeah.
him over the fire in Chicago.
That's right. There's
in
no...
Miami, they don't mess around. And there's a reason that, you know, guys like, what's his name, Rubio?
Yeah.
The governor down there.
Governor now of Florida.
You know, there's a reason that Jeb Bush is married to a Cuban and speaks as much Spanish as he does. And there's a reason that outside of this Guillen thing, that the Cuban Americans are so pissed off, and it's because a lot of them were displaced
yeah.
by them building the stadium in Little Havana.
That's true.
So this is kind of strike two right now, and I'm looking forward to seeing what strike three is going to be.
That won't take long with a lawyer.
You know he's not going to go out peacefully. We know that.
Yeah, he won't go. He's going to go down. It'll be with some flames, you know?
Absolutely. And I don't think we'd have it any other way. And
yeah.
Truth of the matter, Mike, is that if the Marlins just start winning consistently, nobody's going to give a damn.
Yeah, it'll just go away like everything else does exactly. in the United States, you know?
You know, if Randy Cunningworth had turned into Toe Blake, then nobody would have cared what language he speaks.
That's the truth. That's the other point I wanted to talk to you about that you started off your show with, talking about the way the hockey's going right now in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, I'm divided. Both of you guys had excellent points, and I'm there watching it, and I'm not sure if I'm enjoying it or I'm watching a car crash. But I'm right down the middle, and it's worth watching. The other side of it, though, that I got to tell you is that Bettman there's a reason he's commissioner. He can lie to your face like nobody's business and make it look sincere.
Am I crazy to think that Gary Bettman's done a good job or he wouldn't be there for, this is his 19th season?
He's done an amazing job. The problem is that as much as we complain, oh, violence, oh, this and that, we want justice in hockey, we're still watching it in bigger numbers than ever before. You know, and at the end of the day, that's all that matters. And we're still spending tons of money buying tickets. And we're not buying stuff, we're watching it. So the advertisers are happy, and they're charging crazy amounts of money to CBC and to TSN and RDS and everyone else.
I mean, the thing that really bothered me is the inconsistency with the judgments and what Shea Weber did against the Detroit Red Wings. They're smashing, what was it, Zetterberg's face into the glass. You know, the thing in the NHL is this. If you're a star player, don't worry about suspension.
Mm-hmm.
When you're basically a rookie nobody on the New York Rangers and you hit Alfredson, it's easy to suspend you.
That's right.
I mean, they always take the easy way out, and that's the problem. They're not going to ruin Nashville's chance for once to make the playoffs after the moves they make. Shea Weber could, he would have to come within inches of killing someone to even get a game.
Does that fall under Shanahan or Bettman, though?
It's the whole thing.
It's the politics. It's the politics of it. That's the thing with, especially with a market like Nashville, where obviously the NHL wants them to succeed.
Right.
You know, I mean, this is
needs
a bit
them,
of a,
needs yeah, them.
Needs them.
It's
to
a
succeed.
Black eye if they don't.
Of course, this is an accusation of collusion, which we don't, we can't prove. But at the same time, it doesn't really look good on them when everybody else is getting suspended back and forth. And Shea Weber basically gets away with murder.
Exactly.
My issue with fighting, Mike, is that I just feel like it leads to a culture that in my mind doesn't represent what I think of hockey when I think of hockey. And I think of big hits. Big hits are a wonderful part of the game.
Big, what's the difference?
Legal hits.
What's the difference?
It's
violence glorified. Either way.
No, there's a barbarism that goes with the, it's barbaric, I find.
What's barbaric?
The constant dirtiness of the play.
Okay.
And I think that the dirtiness leads up to the fight. It's let's chip, let's chip, let's chip, and then boom, let's go. And the crowd goes nuts and everybody salivates, and guaranteed the suits at NBC are like, oh yeah, our ratings are flying. Good thing we did an afternoon game today. And you know, Bob Cole's going, oh baby. Like you said, I'm torn because I'm not changing the channel, Mike.
Yeah, oh, baby.
I'm watching it.
But listen, Dave, we cannot deny what we are. We cannot deny what we are. Be happy that we're still not feeding Christians to the lions, and we prefer our violence to be in a controlled environment.
Hey, man, I had nothing to do with that.
No, I'm not blaming you for this one. I'm not blaming you for this one. But be happy that we prefer our violence in a controlled environment. It's stimulation. We're still Homo sapiens. We have an affinity for violence. It is what is it a product of society, or is it the reverse? Does the fighting make us worse as a people, or is the fighting worse in the opposite direction?
It's bloodlust,
yeah.
Jay.
Which is a natural human condition, which we all have. It's,
you know,
like
what
you said, the car crash.
It doesn't explain
reference.
The NFL. It never explains the NFL then.
What do you mean?
You have the greatest game in terms of sheer profit, and it can be barbaric, but there's no fighting. There's hitting.
No.
They can't, though. They can't fight.
But you see,
they're all armored up.
Yeah, but the thing
they
is,
would if they could, believe me.
Maybe they would, but at the same point in time, hockey's not that far away. I mean, you can keep those gloves on. There's no one telling you to take those gloves off. And if you put a rule tomorrow that says no gloves off, there's no fighting in hockey.
Did it come out today what Aaron Asham's fine or suspension was for that dirty, dirty hit in the game yesterday?
I think they're still talking about it.
They're trying to decide how valuable he is to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, exactly. It seems that he is.
Yeah, we're looking through stats to make sure that, you know, that if he's valuable, he won't get anything.
Okay,
know?
So, but you brought that up earlier in the conversation. That is a screwed up thing. And that's something that the league needs to deal with. And look, I understand that where I'm coming at it from is I sound like a hippie. And I'm also trying to prove a theory that's never been tested. Fighting has always been a part of the game in one way or another. The truth of the matter is, I was always brought up, taught that the best teams don't have to sink to that level. And yes, it was considered sink to that level in my household. It was watch the Europeans and watch how graceful they are.
And watch how they get their head smashed in by Shea Weber into the glass.
Right, right.
Because let's be honest, if I'm Staubitz's agent today...
Yeah,
his
stock
guy.
Went up.
I'm the happiest guy. I'm calling Montreal. I'm calling Jeff. I'm not even waiting for the new GM. I'm saying, listen, my guy needs to play for you. As you can see here, you need protection.
Yeah, it's that you need us now.
Yeah, because you went with the Bob Gainey. We're going to get some nice little small guys who skate fast and get their head smashed in.
Yeah, but how good did that look the year that they finished first? And how good did that look the year that the Habs made the Final Four?
Yeah, it looked great until now you meet one of these.
Until they ran into Philly.
Yeah, that's right. You know, who was bigger and tougher, and they had Chris Pronger at the time, and you're afraid for your life.
Right.
And, you know, and you know what? Even, you know, I look at Chris Neal, and the Canadians had a chance to get him, supposedly, at the deadline a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. I look at Konopka, who was a free agent. They didn't pick him up. I mean, let's be honest. If you want,
no, because the experiments that the Canadians have made with picking up fighters in the past decade have been pretty much disastrous.
It's true, but you know what? You need. I mean, you got to get the right ones. You need guys who can still play a little bit. I mean, look, Asham. Mm-hmm. He left Montreal. I thought this guy would peter out and be, you know, who knows doing what. This guy's still in the league.
Aaron Asham, was that
for the Canadians?
Was that the Marius Tchaikovsky trade?
I mean, was that 10 years ago?
It was. Eh?
It was. Yes.
Wow. Talk about hype. I mean, Marius Tchaikovsky and, oh, goodness, what was it? Sergei Berezin.
Oh, yeah.
Now we're going down memory lane.
Yeah, there's another hero, though, from our past.
And I don't know, at the time, yeah, it seemed like it made sense to get rid of Aaron Asham. Meanwhile, I'm pretty sure that Tchaikovsky played his final game in the NHL in a Canadiens uniform that season.
And Asham's still playing.
And Asham's still a thorn in many people's sides.
Asham and Neal have their hearings booked for tomorrow.
I would have. Oh, there. Thank you, Jay.
Yeah.
Who was the flyer yesterday that got into the fight with the jersey over his head?
Timonen.
That was Kimmo Timonen?
Yeah, well, when he was getting a beating from Letang.
He sure was.
Yeah.
He sure was with his jersey over his head, so he had no idea what was coming.
And by the way,
did they teach that in Finland?
That's good. Classic.
Neil has two separate hearings tomorrow.
That's amazing. He's got a 10 o'clock and a 2 o'clock.
He's got a double jeopardy going on.
Double jeopardy.
Please, that'll be $2,500 for each one. He's the value. Yeah. How many points did he get this year?
Well, he scored 40.
Yeah, you can't touch him.
And he was flying in that game. I mean, he was one of the only bright spots for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah, you can't take him out.
Sergei Berezin and Marius Tchaikovsky, don't anybody ever accuse me of not knowing my hockey.
Hey.
Mike, thanks for the call, man.
Thanks, guys. Have a good evening.
Catch you next week.
You bet.
Let's not forget Darcy Tucker was drafted by the Canadiens, too.
That's right, and he played a season.
He would have been a very useful player here had they kept him. He was for Toronto, I believe.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He was
the guy you love to hate is usually a guy you love on your team.
He was in the trade that brought Patrick Poulin and Stefan Richie back to the Habs.
Oh, my God. Wow. Yeah, let's just keep rolling down memory lane. If somebody can call in.
Didn't he go with Lyle Odelein?
I don't have a.
No, he went to Tampa Bay.
I don't have a. Right. I don't have a Brewtopia gift certificate with me right now. But I will spend $50 at Brewtopia on anybody that can call in and give me a really good Juha Lind anecdote. I feel like that's all that this segment is missing. We'll take a little break right now, Jimmy, and then we'll come back and we'll wrap up the show in a nice little package. Because, you know, that's what we do. This is the Kaufman Show. I am Dave Kaufman. He is Jay Farrar. And you can see how we do things in this studio by going to YouTube and typing in the Kaufman Show TSN. Check out our March 19th episode with Patrick Burke from You Can Play, Nicholas Makrizanaris, former Canadian Olympian and sprinter, and the Jimmy Riggers. And a little bit of black and white, a little bit of color, a lot of HD. And Jay, I got to say, I think we came off all right.
I look good, man.
There you go.
I look good.
There you go. I was told on Twitter today that I was very cute. So
really?
We'll roll with that.
By
yeah.
who?
What was the... we're going to have to scroll down a little. There's been a couple of messages today. Her name on Twitter is Celestia.
Celestia?
Yeah, Celestia.
You sure that wasn't a spam, Kaufman?
I'm pretty sure.
Okay, good.
I mean, it totally could have been. But no, no. Dave, c'est toi qu'on voit en premier. And then, mais qui a parlé en premier sur la vidéo? Lui est super cute. And then once more, cute guy.
So, a lot of cute going around.
There's a lot of cute going on. And don't worry, Jay, you're pretty cute too.
No, I'm handsome.
I like the opening. I like the little handshake we give each other, and then the point, and we head off down the street.
And the man hug, and then we go.
How about me looking all forlorn in front of the Olympic Stadium, the Big O
with
and
your Don Johnson glasses on?
Yeah, and the baby Expos cap. All right, this is the Kaufman Show. Might as well get out before the song ends, and we'll be back. Stage shift, we are.
You don't knock. Don't knock. Just walk on in. The door.
Well, if you listen to this show, you know what that sound means. I think this is the second to last song of the night pretty consistently for the last few months.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
Yeah, it's the Detroit Cobras. You don't knock.
You just walk on in.
You just walk on in. And yeah, one of my favorites.
Yeah.
So
very catchy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I feel like it's a good...
I was dancing in my head.
There you go.
Yeah.
It gets a lot of play in my car.
I could imagine.
Yeah. It's you know what? A lot of the stuff that I listen to on air or that I play on air is stuff that I listen to. I'll make the CDs
clearly
for the show. Yeah, funnily enough.
Yeah.
Although I don't think that Van Lingle Mungo is going to get a lot of play in
probably
the car.
Probably not.
But that was funny. One of the oddest baseball names. But I think there's one in there, Sigmund Jacuzzi.
And I don't Sigmund Jacuzzi.
Sigmund Jacuzzi. And I swear to God, ever since I was a little kid, hearing that in that song, it just cracks me up.
That's great.
Not one of the oddest names on in baseball, but definitely one of the oddest people would be Jose Canseco right now.
I think he's on a bender tonight.
Oh, God.
Here's one of his last tweets. Let me be clear. That home run off my head should have been a four-base error. It was not going over the wall. It cannot be scored a hit. It's the disco version of Close Encounters of a Third Kind, ladies and gentlemen.
What is going on here?
Well,
it's,
yeah.
It's like...
Well, that's what he's playing right now.
I know.
That's what's going through his head.
But it sounds like a porno.
Yeah, well...
It's that funk, man. It's that bass. It's
I think that's from a McCracken movie, isn't it?
Release the Voros McCracken. Travis Reitzman just chimed in again because, you know, he's a cool dude. Had a great time on the Kaufman Show tonight, quickly becoming the highlight of my week, and my life is pretty awesome. So we appreciate that, Travis. Always good to talk a little baseball with you. Kind of glossed over a bit. The war part, I was fine. The dips part, he started to lose me. Not going to lie. I imagine we all felt the same way. Jimmy, what is is this a little more...
That's a little more like it.
That's a little more.
That's probably what's going on right now. This is playing. John Williams is in his room right now playing this just to encourage him a little bit. There was another one that he wrote earlier.
One more weird version of it, and I think John Williams would have been spinning in his grave.
And he's not even dead.
That's right. would have been less funny if he was.
Yes.
All right, let's go home.
one of his earlier ones is "Are you with me or are you against me?" Something like that, and it's getting something's going on over at the Canseco household right now.
Trouble a brewing. I think that Jose Canseco needs he needs to go back to 20 years ago, 20 years and a couple of months ago, and just remember the good old days.
Well, it seems that he is because his picture spread on his Twitter page. Is a Bash brother. It's the Bash brother hit with McGuire. How much do you think he appreciates that photo being up? Oh, the good old days with me and Jose.
You know, hanging out in the bathroom.
Hanging out in the bathroom and sterilizing things.
Sterilizing? Oh, dude.
What did I say? Did I say something?
Nothing. No. We'll assume that all the...
Are you one of them or one of us?
Huh. He obviously
that's what it was.
He doesn't remember the rules from back in the day.
No.
Okay, let's go over the ground rules. You can't leave first until you chug a beer. Any man scoring has to chug a beer. You have to chug a beer at the top of all odd-numbered innings. Oh, and the fourth inning is the beer inning.
Hey, we know how to play softball.
Jose Canseco will forever be remembered for the Simpsons episode. and not for Esther and not for totaling the car and probably not for 40-40 and, well, probably for juiced. But I think that the – if we can at least allow that – well, think of Canseco as a hero. He'll be the guy that saved the woman's appliances from the fire. He'll be the guy that helped Ralphie Wiggum beat Bart's team in softball in their pickup game.
He'll be the guy that'll introduce an alien civilization to Earth.
He will be
on the top of a mountain in Montana or Wyoming.
What's crazy is that he's not, well, he thinks he's 20, but he's only 45 years old.
Right.
There's still half his life ahead of him to change and become a productive. I know. Don't laugh at me, John Kakalakis.
I don't think he's doing.
I'm trying to do something sweet and nice to end off the show.
Honestly, well, Cobman, I don't think this is a question of him choosing to be this way. I think there's a problem here.
Well, there's obviously a problem.
Yeah.
And there always has been. I guess the lesson to be learned from this is don't do drugs, kids.
Right.
I'm serious. How can this not be attributed to how he screwed up his body? That for sure affects your mind.
Oh, sure. All that testosterone and liquid going through your brain. I mean, who knows, right?
Right. Who knows? And just these tweets, I've talked about it before. I have followed and unfollowed Jose Canseco more than anybody else on Twitter. And right now I'm still in the unfollow stage. I figure I follow you, John. I follow you, Jay. I follow Bruce Arthur. And between you guys, I get every Canseco tweet out there. I'm torn. And I hear, I want to defend him. I want to be that little kid and think about Jose Canseco. Travis Reitzman makes a couple of really, really important points. And that's something that Travis Reitzman is really good at. And that's why it's a pleasure that we get to have him on the show. And I'm happy to call him a friend. It's about not just being comfortable. And it's about, and it's something that we try to do on this show, Jay. We don't just go with the comfortable answers.
No. Why would we do that?
And I don't mind being, you know, I'm more than down with somebody saying, hey, no, you're wrong. You forgot about this. You're missing this. You're missing that. I have no problem with being corrected. I think it's anybody that doesn't like somebody that can't, like, the whole flip-flop thing with John Kerry, because, you know, we're very topical on this show. It bothers me that. It really, really, really pisses me off that somebody can be tarred and feathered for having an opinion, learning more about a subject, and changing their mind. That's what I'm all about. That makes no sense to me. It's, you know, I wouldn't, if I went by my first opinions, I would never have liked the Beatles or Zeppelin.
What were you thinking, Dave?
I was thinking I was a Stones fan and I was a kid and I didn't realize that you could, I thought it was like you have one baseball team and you have one band.
Oh, sounds kind of like American politics, doesn't it?
Kinda.
And then you're persecuted for thinking the opposite way. Anyway, flip-flopping.
First Amendment is,
Oh.
Yeah. It was interesting to be in New York and to talk with many Americans about Cuba and about Guillen, because that was the huge story while I was down there. And frankly, the one thing I noticed was just indifference. The average American doesn't remember when Cuba was free. When Cuba was an American imperialist, all the casinos, all the everything, all the shenanigans, if you will, shenanigans. And it just seems to me that outside of the bubble in Miami, not a lot of people care. And this story managed to be blown up.
Slow news week.
Yes. Slow news week.
What's that? That and the Titanic. That's all we heard about last week.
Yeah. And
nothing going on.
The Titanic.
Nothing going on.
I thought about that a lot. You know, I actually had a couple of songs ready to go if we were going to do something on the Titanic.
Please don't tell me Celine Dion.
No, of course not. Okay. Nautical Disaster by the Hip, of course. And a Gord Downey song about the Kursk. Remember the Kursk submarine?
Yes.
A great song called Pascal's Submarine. And I don't know, the Titanic, the only thing that I thought was really fascinating about the Titanic was that real-time tweets. They were real-time tweeting the Titanic from different points of view of different people on the ship. I thought it was interesting. Whether it was 100 years ago or 80 years ago or, you know, for me, I think of the Titanic and I picture the wall somewhere behind the plate as you're walking up the ramp at Fenway Park that shows the newspaper that says Titanic sinks, Fenway Park opens, they're within a few days of each other.
Right.
What's crazy is all the Montreal tie-ins from the Titanic. A lot of people from this town died.
Yeah, some are buried here on Mount Royal.
Yeah, I was reading Richard Burnett, good friend of the show, his blog about one of the Gazette writers wrote a book of all the Montreal tie-ins. Yeah, it's really sad, and it still happens. We saw the Costa Concordia. There's a lot of negligence out there, and the sea, she's big and scary. But yeah, slow news week, and it was a pleasure to be away for it and to hear thunder crack.
Good.
And once again, Jay, you guys did a great job last week.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
You didn't bang into the microphone anywhere near as much last week as you did.
Yeah, I know. I don't know what's going on today.
It's the bill of your cap.
No, it's my earphone. I keep going close to the... Maybe I need glasses or something. I don't know what it is. I have no depth perception right now.
I hope I don't sound like a smug prick, but I was really proud of you guys last week.
Thank you very much, man.
I thought you guys... It was so much fun to listen to my show and not feel like... I felt you guys didn't miss a beat.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
So I can...
We had fun.
I can get out of town again. And,
anytime.
Leave the reins to you guys.
Anytime.
Try and hold back on the Slayer, though, next time.
It was Seasons in the Abyss. It was nice.
Is that what it was?
Yeah. Come on. Inner flesh, a bloody tomb, a decorated splatter brightens the room. Come on. That's beautiful. That's poetry, my friend.
Well, I'll tell you what. We will. That will be the last word for you today.
Thank you.
And we can end from that graphic lyricism to Mr. Joel Plaskett, who will be in Montreal in 10 days' time. Jimmy, thank you so much. John Kakalakis, thank you, sir. Jay Farrar, missed you, buddy.
Missed you too, bud.
Yeah,
glad to have you back.
Thank you to Gary Bettman. Thank you to the 420 Comedy Show. Check them out on Friday. Somebody's birthday, supposedly. Thank you to Shaka Brody, Benjamin Christensen, the MLB Fan Cave, probably wandering home right now. Hope he stops off at the Minetta Tavern and has a drink for me. And Travis Reitzma, gracias y viva. If you've got enough to get in a cab, there'll be drinks on the house. If your house burns down, there's a reason that I love this town. I saw your band in the early days. We all understand why you moved away. We'll hold a grudge. I shot the shit with miniature Tim. If he needs a tune, then I'll write one for him. We like the same books and we like the same sounds. There's a reason that I love this town. I played a show in Kelowna last year. Said, pick it up, Joel. We're dying in here. Picture one hand clapping, then picture half that sound. There's a reason that I hate that town. If you saw my band in the early days, then you understand why we moved away. You hold a grudge. Davey and me, face down in our soup, some French restaurant. I saw Riviere de Loup last night at a tour. We burnt the place to the ground. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town.
There's a reason that I love this town.
You've been listening to The Kaufman Show for Jay.